using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Friday, the 27th of August, year of our Lord 2021, day 531 of the world held hostage. Well, today we have a lot of amazing news. I have a very sad tragedy that broke yesterday. And the people who died still don't have a full body count there. But what's even more troubling is the don't ask, don't care policy of the Pentagon in terms of people who were there. We're going to take a look at the other war, the war against everyone on Earth. This is the pop-up clinics coming to U.S. schools, says the head of the Department of Education in the U.K. They're going to start vaccinating kids in school as well. And in Japan, they've pulled over a million Moderna vaccines because they found a substance that reacts to magnets. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You know, it is... Everybody is concerned about Afghanistan, and normally what has happened there and what is continuing to unfold, and the amazing press conference that we saw yesterday, even Drudge, a tireless cheerleader of all things left-wing now. And let me just insert here. When people say, I don't have a bias, I have said for the longest time, everybody's got a bias. And when you want to look at the Drudge Report, for example, Drudge doesn't write any articles. Drudge picks which articles he wants to put out there. Is there any doubt from anyone that Drudge used to be on the right side of things, and now he's on the wrong side of things, or we'll say the left side of things? But there's absolutely no doubt that what he chooses to pick to talk about, what he puts up as an aggregator, as an editor, what the Drudge site or whoever is running this thing now, what is chosen to be put up there, clearly has a political view. What they choose to report, choosing how it's going to be phrased, so therefore choosing that you're going to get the story coming from the Washington Post or the New York Times, somebody like that, somebody of that ilk, or CNN, choosing the people who are going to report it and the way that they're going to approach this with their point of view as well. We all have a point of view, and anybody that says that news should be, or is, or can be, nonpartisan, objective, either is lying to you, and I think that's really the case, or they're not aware of their own biases. Everybody has biases, even in what you pick to listen to. And so thank you for listening. But before I get into Afghanistan, where I've seen death reports all over the place, I've seen, even as time has gone on, 85 killed. But even before that, we saw 103 killed, 90 Afghans and 13 American soldiers. So it's really hard to get a handle on the true body count there, just like it's hard to get a handle on the true body count of people who have been harmed by these vaccines that they continue to ignore. And so I'm not going to ignore that. As a matter of fact, let me say to you that as horrific as that is, that the death of 13 people is nothing, 13 U.S. soldiers is nothing compared to what is happening worldwide. And it's not just deaths of Americans that matter either, because these shots that were prepared by Trump are the shots that went round the world, and they're killing people everywhere. So when we look at the situation in Afghanistan, you got 13 American soldiers who died, 90 non-Americans who died, and it's a similar situation around the world. It's not just Americans who are dying from these American shots that were funded, injected with cash by President Trump, that he still brags about. People are being killed worldwide. This is the entire world being held hostage, because this is an agenda to lock down everyone on the planet, as we now see a year and a half into this. And let me just put this in perspective as well, because if we look simply at the U.S. VAERS database, 12, 13,000 people over 7 months or so, that averages out to just under 60 people a day dying from the shots. Some of them dying within 48 hours of the shots. Let me repeat that. Just under 60 people a day, just in the U.S. If we look at the number of people who have been injured, if you combine just the VAERS database run by the CDC, if you compare that database to and add that to the European database, and the European database only has about half of the European countries in it, that gives you about 1.5 million people. And of course, the UK's got its own database. There are databases, perhaps, I don't know, in Central and South America. Africa is basically setting this one out, fortunately for them. But also in Asia. But we don't have the data on those. So let's just look at the U.S. and half of the European countries. When you look at that, 1.5 million people in terms of the EU, half of the EU, and the U.S., that works out to more than 7,100 people being injured every day over the last 7 months. So I'm going to start talking today, before I get into Afghanistan, I'm going to focus on the greatest threat to human life globally, and that is the Trump shots. And I'm going to talk about this because this is injuring over 7,000 people a day, killing over 60 people a day just in the United States. And let's look at how, even though this is happening, they are racing headlong. I think a lot of you are going to be interested to hear what's going on in Japan. We've had so much stuff about the magnets, and that was something that I didn't feel there was sufficient evidence in it. Anecdotal evidence of people showing videos of this, I did not feel that that was significant. There is more evidence now, and so we'll follow the evidence. But still, the bottom line is, when we look at the rush to go through this, the emergency use authorization was outrageous to begin with. The pressure that was put on them by Trump, it was purely political, thinking it was going to help him before the election. No, if he would have led people, if he would have stood up against this, that would have helped him, because he paved the way for the mail-in ballot corruption. And again, as I had a person contact me and say, you know, I'm blind. I've always done mail-in ballots. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a vote-by-mail election where they mailed ballots out to people. You didn't have to have any handshaking or verification, as we've done with those ballots for a long time. And not only that, but they were sending them out to people who didn't even ask for them. And people were getting ballots from multiple jurisdictions. They'd get it from the county that they lived in and an adjacent county. There was absolutely no supervision at all about this. No attempt to validate who was getting the ballots. That's what I'm talking about. And that was all enabled by the lockdown. And Trump pushed the fear as much as anybody else. Afraid to have an RNC convention. Afraid to have the kinds of rallies that he had this last week. And he has the audacity to go to that rally and talk about how much worse things are under Biden than they were under him. Well, if things are worse under Biden than they were under Trump, then why didn't Trump have the rallies? Why is he doing it now, when Biden is in charge, if things are worse? I mean, nothing that he says makes any sense to anybody who is looking at this. And I had people say, after I said, never forget, never forgive this guy. A lot of people, Christians, said, you know, you need to forgive people. And I understand that. It's hard. It's really hard. But I understand that if you hold a grudge against someone, refusing to forgive them, it has real practical consequences even for you. Not just as a Christian, we're called to forgive people, because it imprisons you. That resentment imprisons you. Now, what I should have said, what I was thinking of, was the QAnon phrase, never forget, never forgive, right? Talking about corruption that they expose. And when they're talking about that, and the way that I used it was, don't make excuses for these people. Don't say that it's 4D chess. Don't say, well, it just happens to be a temporary blind spot, but I'm sure he'll come around. No, he didn't. never forget that he did that and never excuse that. Perhaps a better way to put it is never forget and never follow. Never follow Trump again. Never follow the people who sold you 4D chess like Alex Jones. Do not follow those people. They're deceivers. You don't have to set, and I honestly don't. I don't sit there, whoa, 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 how can I get back? He doesn't care what I think about him. You know, Trump doesn't know or care, and I don't know or care what he thinks about me, if he even thinks about me. Seriously, doubt he does. But let's take a look at the toxic medicines first before we look at the toxic foreign policy of the Pentagon. Because these things are really not that far apart. You know, the Pentagon is behind all this gain-of-function research. The Pentagon, DARPA, is behind NewsGuard, shutting down free speech. DARPA is the sole funder of ElectionGuard to manipulate elections. That's what this is about. They fund it through Microsoft, but the money's coming from DARPA. And you know what else DARPA funded back in 2013? mRNA vaccines through Moderna. That's when they began funding it. So these things have been around for quite some time, and they are a bioweapon. But let's, you know, as we're talking about these people who just can't get enough of injecting those of us around them. And this is why when you look at these Republicans who are constantly cheering the vaccine, Trump being first among them. But I gave you a long list yesterday of Republicans. Oh, yeah, get the vaccine. They're great. They're great. Here's a good metaphor. There was a man arrested in London after he was going from store to store and injecting food with whatever they don't know what it was. But he took a hypodermic needle and he's injecting food with it, this substance. Isn't that a metaphor for Trump, for Biden, for Fauci? I think they know what's in it, but we don't. The police are still looking for this, and they're telling everybody. He reportedly injected foodstuff at three different supermarkets in southwest London using needles. He was arrested on suspicion of contamination of goods with intention of causing public harm or anxiety. When are we going to arrest Trump, Biden, and Fauci, and Francis Collins? And I've got a long list of people who need to be put up for war crimes, global war crimes. These people are running around contaminating the human race with the intention of causing harm. And they're doing it because for the last year and a half, they've been creating public anxiety. I mean, that's basically what they're doing. These are the madmen running around with hypodermic needles, sticking it in everything. And it doesn't matter how many people you see harmed by this. Full speed ahead. Ignore that. That's rare. Oh, that person dropped dead. Forget it. It's rare. Oh, that person dropped dead. That's rare, too. We just keep going. Keep injecting stuff, right? This guy goes to three different stores. We've gone to every country in the world. This Pentagon DARPA project funded by Trump, pushed by Trump, pushed by Biden. They have pushed this out to the entire world. Do you ever realize? I love America. I do not love this government. I despise the Pentagon and DARPA. It's kind of a few decades ago, I had that moment, that comedy skit. We have those two guys in the Nazi uniform that goes, whatever his name was, let's say Hans. Hans, did you ever realize we might be the baddies? Did you ever realize that we might be, the American government, might be the most evil organization on the face of the earth right now? Not to say that the Chinese don't want to be that or the Russians don't want to be that. It's just that we have the power right now. And what is behind this is something that is supernatural. We right now, our American government, is the channel for this supernatural attack on all of humanity. We are the bad guys. We brought the bad guys in from Nazi Germany. We set up Operation Paperclip. And then we brought in their values as well. It is currently unknown as to how many items have been contaminated or what they've been contaminated with. It is currently unknown how many humans and in what ways they have been harmed for life. A Science in the Shadows. This is coming out from the Washington Post. The Washington Post did an article about gain-of-function research and the involvement of the NIH, the National Institutes of Health. And it's not just tardy. They've sat on this for a year and a half, and so one has to ask, why now would they be doing this? Is this preparing the public for what's about to happen in terms of a quote-unquote accident? Why were they silent all this time? Is this predictive programming? I think it's ominous that the Washington Post would belatedly be talking about this issue. But they use an example. They said a decade ago, scientists funded by the National Institutes of Health used ferrets to engineer a highly lethal flu virus. This is how the article begins. The purpose of the research, known as gain-of-function, was to better understand how viruses evolve and to help devise medicines to combat the potential disease threats. But it came with a risk. A laboratory mishap could unleash a devastating pandemic. This research was conducted in the Netherlands and the University of Wisconsin, and it sparked an international controversy that led to new safeguards for such experiments. But over the past 4 years, NIH leaders and other U.S. officials have weakened key aspects of those controls, a Washington Post examination found. They do not mention in this article anything about the accident at the National Primate Center that is connected to Tulane University, where you had a bacteria that typically lives in the soil. I've talked about this many times, Burkholderia pseudomallei. It only existed in two places on Earth. It's very rare. But if you get it, it has a 40% case fatality rate. Now, we've locked down the entire world for something that even in their own rigged statistics has a case fatality rate of a fraction of 1%. Information I've seen makes it equivalent to the flu, 0.1%. They say that it's a little bit higher. Nevertheless, we're talking about something that is more than 100 times higher than their most fantastic, pumped-up ideas about COVID in terms of a case fatality rate. So what do? They brought it here. That's bad enough. But they were engineering it to make it more deadly. They were engineering it to make it more transmissible, and that's what gain-of-function research is about. Nothing was said about that. Nothing was said about the fact that they covered up that as they were investigating how it escaped from only a biosafety level 3 lab. Why is something like that in a biosafety level 3 lab? You know, they have 4 levels of safety. No mention of the fact that the CDC people who were studying it, one of them came down with it, but of course they just dismissed it, said, it must have been on a prior exposure to something that only exists in 2 remote areas of the world. The science that is involved in gain-of-function, folks, if you really want to understand what this is and a metaphor for it in the popular culture, look at Alien and Aliens. In both of those, you had an antagonist who decided that they wanted to get this organism back because it could be used by the Pentagon. All right? First one, it was a robot. Second one, it was a corporate guy. But that's basically what this is. They're not just trying to get the alien back. They're bringing aliens in, and then they're weaponizing the aliens even more so. That's what Fauci and Francis Collins are doing. Fauci is that, one of them's a robot, and the other one is that sniveling little bean counter that's in Aliens too. That's what those two guys are, if you want an analogy. The risks are absolutely real. They're not intellectual constructs or hypotheticals, said a Stanford University physician and microbiologist, David Relman. Eventually, he said, something that you make or information that you release will result in an accident of some kind. And, of course, this is by design. Operation Paperclip was the beginning of all of this. They brought back a lot of Nazi scientists. They brought in some Japanese scientists who had been criminally experimenting on American soldiers. They wanted their research. You had, again, I've mentioned it before. An excellent book on this is by Annie Jacobson. It's called Operation Paperclip. I think she has probably the best book on this. She has a very nice voice to listen to. I listened to the book on audio, so she's got a very pleasant reading voice. I would highly recommend it, that you educate yourself about this. But, of course, there are other books about what has happened with these gain-of-function programs and so forth. But one of the things that really stands out is the connection to the Captain America mythology, where you had German scientists who were trying to find ways that they could revive pilots who died from bailing out over the English Channel. They froze, and they thought, well, you know, we're getting there, and they've just died. If we can revive them, even after they've died and been dead for a short period of time, maybe that would help. And they worked with it, trial and error, until they came up with a way to revive people who had been dead for, you know, 10, 20 minutes. I forget exactly how long it was. It had been frozen. And that got out that we allowed that Nazi scientist who had that technology to, we're bringing him in to work with us. Because when that came out, you had someone who was with the U.S. military said, we found, first they told us that they were doing this with animals, but we found a vat where they were doing it with humans. And then they eventually found out from their records that they had gone through a prison camp, prisoners, and with trial and error, they would kill them, freeze them to death, and then try to bring them back until they were successful. Killed a lot of people. That's the kind of stuff that we're doing right now with the vaccines. Even if these things were not designed to be deliberately harmful, that is what we're doing right now. Subjecting the individual to the greater good of society, right? That's the principle that we opposed in the Nuremberg situation, even if it's effective. But I don't think that's what's even involved here. So, as we look at this, and I think a person who was essentially overlooked in this was Allison Young, USA Today, back in 2013-14. She did a series of articles for USA Today. I think she deserved a Nobel Prize, or not Nobel Prize, Pulitzer Prize, for exposing this stuff. It caused the looking at the number of accidents and the number of labs that are scattered out throughout the United States, more than 200 of them. There's probably one in your neighborhood. There was one in my neighborhood that I didn't know about, UNC Chapel Hill. They were right there as part of that research. The bottom line is they put a moratorium on it for a while, and then in 2017 they took this off. Francis Collins, of course, who is head of the NIH, technically Fauci's boss, but I don't think anybody tells Fauci what to do. I think he is controlling everyone else. But he is somebody who came from the Human Genome Project, so it has that element of DNA modification in it. But again, as I point out, this is going back to money coming from DARPA, 2013, October 2nd, 2013. Moderna gets $25 million for drugs to warn off bioweapons and infectious diseases. DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, awarded the money to a research of up to 5 years, just in time, right? And the CEO of Moderna gave quotes at the time, talking about how they're going to be using mRNA, because, again, Moderna was originally called Mode RNA. That's how they pronounce it. They didn't change the spelling of it. They just put the emphasis on a different syllable. It's modern. It's not Mode RNA. The weaponization of medicine. As freemansperspective.com says, I think nearly every adult grasps that medicine is being used as a weapon. Now it's just talking about how it's being literally used as a biological weapon. In this article, they're talking about how it's also being used, as a political weapon for control, for submission, because that is the most blatant weaponization of all of this. And he mentions five things. He says he's not a medical professional, but everybody else in his family was. He's been around this. And he says, here's a couple of observations. Number one, science is not consensus. How many times have I said that? Science is not determined by majority vote. As a matter of fact, the only time we have a scientific advancement is when somebody challenges the consensus. Number two, medicine stands apart from and above politics. It should. Science should, because it should be based on evidence, not on authority. That has been the basis of scientific advancement since Francis Bacon said we're not going to have scholasticism, arguments from authority, because that was where the authorities were in the universities and things like that. No, we're going to do it by empiricism, by observation, by data, by measurement, by experimentation. Number three, peer review no longer means anything. Peer review has been captured by academic hierarchies and almost fully separated from science itself. It has become a tool of institutional power. Everything has become a tool of institutional power because they're shutting down debate. They're shutting down independent thought. They're shutting down any concern for the opinions or the health or the liberties of the individual. Number four, medicine and science have nothing to do with social pressure. Except now, at this point it does, because they've just now, social pressure, thuggery, has taken over. Number five, if you don't read multiple scientific papers, especially from rebels and from castouts, you simply don't know. You see, if you have something that is based on experimentation, observation, data, and so forth, you shouldn't have a problem defending your opinion or what you hold to be true. I learned this a long time ago with my Christian beliefs. I don't have a problem with people criticizing my Christian beliefs because they can withstand the scrutiny from a rational standpoint. They can withstand the scrutiny. I don't, I've got answers for those things. Having been trained in submission to authority, and to then speak against authority is terrifying. And this is why this is happening. It's happening because we've been trained to be weak. So you are intimidated in an institution where you're raised in the schools. So there's somebody up front, authority figure up front. They have more information than you do. They're smarter than you do. They're going to stand in judgment of what you have to say with grades. The good news is I learned that wasn't true a long time ago. And in junior high school, I had a teacher. Used to butt heads with her on evolution and many other things. And I was in advanced science class. And I had started in elementary school. I had an older sister. I started reading college textbooks and on biology and things like that. And so when she started talking about some things, once she had a thing, nocturnal animals go out at night or something like that? And I knew that it was because the retinal cells were different on, on animals who had better night vision, right? They have rods and cones, are two different types of cells that you find in the retina. And the cones are they give you visual acuity and the ability to see color better than the rods do. But the rods are more sensitive to light. And so we have more cones than we do rods, but the nocturnal animals is just the opposite. And so I thought, oh, I got the answer to that. I just read that in my sister's book. And she kind of slapped me down. She says, what are you talking about, rods and cones? And she said, it's because they can see better at night. I was like, okay, all right. We don't have to really kind of worry about authority anymore. This person is supposedly. But anyway, so you're trained to be submissive to authority. These people have all the answers. Well, no, they don't. And I hope we're at a point right now for the world to start seeing that these emperors have no data. They have no clothes. They have no authority. They have no information. They're not doing science. And we need to lose that fear. And also there's the fear of appearing stupid. Now, she did her best to humiliate me, but I knew I was right. And that we have to have the courage of convictions to know that we are right and to stand on that and not be intimidated by that. That's what Solzhenitsyn was talking about. That's the essence of totalitarianism, is to make you to submit to something that you know is not right, and even to get you to believe it. Even if you have to submit to it in order to get along, as he said, you do not tell yourself that 2 plus 2 equals 5, although that was Orwell's analogy. So let's get to, I know that everybody's, I teased the thing about magnets. I know everybody wants to hear about that. And this is actually pretty amazing to me, because I looked at it, I was very skeptical, I got to admit. And I said, look, we've got a lot of things that we can focus on, that we need to focus on what is easily provable. This is not easily provable. And so I pushed back against it. I said, I don't think this is an argument that we should use. I'm not saying that it is yet. But this from Information Liberation. Japanese health officials, and this is none other than the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare, said early yesterday, the only place I've seen picked up on it has Information Liberation, Chris Minahan. So hats off to him for finding this. And this is reported in a publication, Nikkei Asia. 1.6 million Moderna doses withdrawn in Japan over contamination. Japanese health officials said contaminated shots contain, quote, a substance that reacts to metals, which, quote, could be metal. Could be metal. Here is what Nikkei Asia says. About 1.6 million doses of Moderna's coronavirus have been taken out of use in Japan because of contamination reported in some vials, the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare said early Thursday. Several vaccination centers have reported that vaccine vials contained foreign matter, according to an announcement from the Japanese Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare, which added that it will seek to minimize the impact of the withdrawal on the country's inoculation program. Full speed ahead. Let's not worry about it. We got contamination in these vials. Who cares? Keep going. That guy dropped dead. Keep going, right? The ministry said later in the day the substance that had been mixed in may have been metal. Quote, it's a substance that reacts to magnets, and a ministry official said, and it could be metal. NASDAQ-listed Moderna confirmed receiving, quote, several complaints of particulate matter, unquote, in vaccine vials distributed in Japan, but it said it had found, quote, no safety or efficacy issues, unquote. See? No problem. Nothing to see here. Continue on. Full speed ahead. Warp speed. Warp speed ahead, Mr. Sulu. In Japan. See, it doesn't matter. You can find metallic reacting, it seems like it's metallic because it reacts to magnets. You can find substances like that. You can find contamination like that. You can do microscopic, and we've had scientists in both Germany and also another country. They have looked at blood of people, and they found stacking of blood platelets, which is indicative of blood cancer. They found very strange reflective substances in there. It might be something that is metallic. Looking at this under a microscope, they found strange stuff in the vaccines themselves. So that's the third country independently has found the same stuff. There's things in the vaccine. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. We just keep going. Early COVID patient samples from Wuhan had genetically modified virus that was similar to the Canadian labs. And so when we look at this and we look at the gain-of-function stuff, they know that they can't really cover this anymore. This is genetically engineered, perhaps to work in combination. Maybe the virus works in combination with the vaccine. Maybe it's a two-part thing, right? But the fundamental issue is, folks, the vaccine is the key. The vaccine is the key. The vaccine is engineered enough that it could be by itself doing everything. But I think they probably have engineered these two things to work together. 7 News reporter Denham Hitchcock in Australia was rushed to the hospital with a Pfizer COVID heart side effect. He didn't have a heart attack. He had pericarditis. But he's in the hospital. He put out a picture of himself all stuck up with monitors all over his chest and so forth. He got the Pfizer vaccine several weeks ago, and then after 25 days, he had persisting symptoms. He suffered from racing heart, pins and needles. Scroll down. I think they've got a picture of him for people looking. There he is right there. Zoom in on that picture. Dizziness over the weekend. The journalist was eventually hospitalized and diagnosed with pericarditis. And every time they talk about this, they mention that it's rare or that it's extremely rare. Did I mention it's extremely, extremely, extremely rare? So it's okay. It doesn't matter. He says in the statement he put out on Instagram, he says, I've battled over whether or not to send this post from a hospital or not, but I decided after 27 years of being a journalist whose primary goal is to discover the truth, it would be hypocritical not to put this out. I'm not, it's all uppercase, not anti-vax, but I'm really not pro-vax either. I'm pro-choice and pro-information to make that choice. It's probably a little late to the hospital, but here I am, diagnosed with pericarditis, or inflammation of the heart, due to the Pfizer vaccine. And every time you see this reported, they always make sure they put in the headline, rare, extremely rare, extremely, extremely rare. How many cases do we have to have? When we had, in 1976, the swine flu vaccine that was going around, they had 50 people who died. It was extremely rare to die. But we decided that if we're going to go with the medical ethics of first do no harm, that we were not going to put that out. And they pulled it from the marketplace. Now, that was 10 years before Fauci secured legal immunity for these vaccines for kids. But we had the 737 MAX. And we had only two crashes. I don't know. I've been trying to figure out, just for the data, how many 737s, because we had airlines all over the world buying Boeing 737 MAXs. I don't know how many of those planes were flying and how many flights they had before we had two plane crashes where 500 people died. And they shut that thing down. And they're still having issues with it. But you could come back and you could say, well, I don't know how many people flew on those things. Was it 1 million? Was it 2 million? Was it 10 million? 20 million people flew on these things? Because they were operating for quite some time. Again, airlines all over the world had them. And every time they do a flight, that's another 200 people. And they were constantly flying. So for the swine flu, we decided that 50 deaths was too much. For the FAA, 500 deaths were too much. But for this, for Pfizer, for Moderna, for the Pentagon, for Trump and Biden and Warp Speed, we don't care if there's 12,000, 13,000 deaths reported in the U.S. alone. We don't care. We keep going. I ask you, if there are 13,000 reported deaths, do you think that maybe 500 of those are real? What's the chances of that? What are the chances that 50 of those are real? I feel like Abraham pleading with God over the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah. Would you stop the vaccine program, President Trump, for 500 deaths? Would you stop it for 50? Would you stop it for 10 children who die from heart attacks? How about the thousands of people every day that are injured? Would you people stop it for any of this? Of course not. So this is a reporter in Australia. Says, well, as a reporter, I feel like I've got to say this. I don't, he doesn't want to be seen as anti-vax because, the shame of that. The shame of being anti-vaccine. Because you'd be going against the establishment. They would shame you. They would make you feel stupid. Let me tell you what stupid is. All my life, I've looked at people who take illicit drugs and say, what in the world would you do something like that for? Why would you take meth or crack cocaine or any of this stuff? Why would you do that? You realize the side effects of that. And I was, I give hats off to Hollywood. I think one of the most effective things in my life to keep me off of anything like that, including alcohol, was at a very young, impressionable age, I saw The Days of Wine and Roses. Watch that if you want to think about addiction and having a good time, but the possible consequences of that later on. What a sad show that was. But boy, it did have a big effect on me. I wasn't going to take a chance. Oh yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. We'll have a party. It's like, you know what happens next? You have to look at things like this and think them through. And so people are ashamed to come out and say, I'm reluctant to do something simply because I'm told to do it by the authorities. I'm reluctant to participate in an experiment. So you have the reporter in Australia. He's not died yet, but likely, you know, heart disease issues are long-lasting. You have, however, the coroner coming out and saying that the BBC presenter Lisa Shaw, who died back in May, and of course they poo-pooed this. They said it had absolutely nothing to do with the vaccine. But there was information saying that, well, yeah, she had blood clots and other things like that, so it looked like it had happened in conjunction with the vaccine. And now, even though you have the coroner coming out, and this is what the coroner says. Coroner said, quote, Lisa died due to complications of an AstraZeneca COVID vaccination. And the BBC is still denying that. Well, it looks like some stuff that maybe is associated with it. It's extremely rare and yada, yada, yada. They're trying to spin this. This gives you an idea of why people tried to storm the lobby of the BBC. This is the organization that continues to lie about people dying, even their own employee. These are the people who said that Building 7 had fallen 20 minutes before it did, while it was unfortunately over the left shoulder of the reporter on 9/11. She died at the age of 44. She leaves behind a husband and a couple of young children, just one child. But the coroner said that she suffered blood clots in the brain, which ultimately led to her death. The inquest heard the condition linked to Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, and they said, though, it's very rare. It's very rare. We don't have to worry about it. It's very rare. Mm-hmm. So she died back on May 21st. And again, you know, how many of these rare incidences are too many? Media reports at the time of her death stated merely that she had been in hospital for, quote, a short illness. That's the way they initially reported in your lying mainstream media. Other people began to see what was happening as her family revealed that they thought that might be a link to the vaccine. Her relatives released a second statement following her death, revealing that she had developed severe headaches only 1 week after having the Oxford AstraZeneca injection, had fallen seriously ill a few days later. Describing some details of her hospital visit, her family said that she'd been treated for blood clots. The protein spikes do not stay in the muscle where they are injected. The biodistribution is throughout the body. It accumulates in a lot of different organs. It plays havoc with the blood system. It creates blood clots and bleeding. And it passes through the blood-brain barrier. On her YouTube channel, Katie Hopkins had said at the time that the family had been told by the hospital that Shaw's death would, quote, definitely not be documented as linked to the vaccine. The BBC reported that it had seen the interim fact of death certificate. They said apparently it listed, quote, complication of AstraZeneca COVID-19 virus vaccination, unquote, but that it was only a consideration with the cause of death to be determined following the investigation. I read to you what the coroner said. The BBC, as usual, like our press here, mainstream press as well as NPR, they're flat out lying to you to push an agenda. An Irish medical doctor said the shots are killing people. We need to stop this. And so her medical license was suspended. She said this Irish medical doctor had just worked all night in the hospital, took time to give an impassioned plea to stop the COVID-19 injections. Her name is Dr. Anne McCloskey. She stated that other than the children for whom the shots are not yet authorized, she said almost everyone else that I treat has had two doses of these shots, the Trump shots. She stated that she is seeing things that in all of her years of practice she has never seen before, such as blood clots in the arm of a young girl in her 20s. Nobody is linking these injuries to the vaccines. She said she states that the hospitals are short-staffed because nurses are quitting, as they do not want to get the jab. They're seeing this as well. And this is why you have Republican Governor Bill Lee putting out Executive Order 83. They knew this was coming. These people all know. They knew that the nurses who have worked under this so-called pandemic for a year and a half are not concerned about this at this point. They're not concerned about the pandemic, but they are concerned about the vaccine, and that a significant number of them would not play along. They would abandon their career as well as their job. And so you have governors like Bill Lee, Republican, Tennessee, governors like Brian Kemp, Republican, Georgia, calling out the National Guard, putting out statements saying we're going to waive the requirements for people to operate as nurses and so forth. We're going to allow students. We're going to allow people to come back who were retired. We're going to let other people who would not normally pass the qualification because they knew they were going to have nursing shortages. And then you have the lying mainstream media telling us that all the hospitals are full when the reality is they don't have nurses. Just as an EMS paramedic who wrote me said, here's the situation in our hospital. We got a lot of empty beds, but we got no nurses. So going back to this Irish doctor, she said the hospitals are short-staffed because they don't want to get the shots, and people are leaving. And she said this, the shots are killing people. We need to stop this. I would take one of these vaccines. In fact, I would take all four of them every hour on the hour in all my four limbs if they would just leave our children alone. And yet, and so then they got rid of her. They got rid of her. In the UK, emails have surfaced saying that they are planning on injecting students in school without their parents' knowledge or consent. And then yesterday, we had Miguel Cardona, Biden's head of the Department of Education. And this is what he had to say.
Vaccines are working, and they're the safest and most effective way to fight back the COVID-19, to prevent outbreaks, and to ensure a safe school year. So I am echoing the president's call to action to host pop-up vaccine clinics in every school across the country.
Pop-up vaccine clinics in every school across the country. We're going to talk about that more. But basically, he went on to say, you know, you have people who are reluctant and hesitant. So we need to have community leaders that they respect. You know, principals, teachers, things like that. He mentions that, right? Now, you notice that when he's referring to minors, to children, he calls them people who are hesitant, and they need to be convinced by community leaders such as principals and teachers. And that's why he wants to put these pop-up clinics here. Do you understand this is a global agenda? Do you understand that there is no difference except how this is being rolled out? You've got the National Health System in the UK working to get approval from the administration so that they can put in clinics to vaccinate kids without their parents' knowledge or consent. At the same time in the U.S., at exactly the same time, too, exactly the same time, the same things are being done here in the U.S. with the Department of Education saying, we'll put in pop-up clinics, bring them in real quick, and take them down when people notice, put them up somewhere else. Put up pop-up clinics where we can browbeat and pressure kids, because just as we're talking about people afraid to challenge their science teacher in advanced science class, oh, yeah, I'm the science teacher that was chosen to teach the advanced science class, so I know everything. People are afraid to challenge that. And these kids are afraid to challenge the authority figures. You know, go back to the Milgram experiment, where you have an authority figure telling you, juice them up, you know, shock them, so forth. They kind of redid that at the beginning of Ghostbusters with Bill Murray, if you remember that. But it's not funny when it happens in real life. And they found that it holds across all different societies. They've repeated that Milgram experiment in a lot of different places, a lot of different ways. And they find that about two-thirds of the people will harm their fellow citizen when told by authority figures. Now, we have about two-thirds in all the different countries that have submitted to authority. Good job, Travis. We have about two-thirds now. Of course, he was doing this not on orders. He was doing it just because he wanted to. he wanted the girl instead of letting him go to the other guy. But anyway, we have two-thirds of the people who have submitted to authority gotten the vaccine, and do you think that as time goes on, we've already seen it, when the authority figures say, your enemy are those people over there, that one-third of the people who haven't been vaccinated, you don't think that they will come after those of us who have not been done that? And, of course, there's also the thing that's at play in the schools, on social media, many other places. What is at play is the peer pressure. And that was shown in the ASH experiment. They had very, very simple problems where they would show people three lines, and you know, you pick the one that is the shortest. And it wasn't even a question of which one was the shortest. But they had everybody in a large audience who was in on the gag, and everybody else would give the wrong answer, and they would keep giving the wrong answer. And after a while, about two-thirds of the people would go along with the majority, even though they knew the answer was wrong. That's living by, that's what Solzhenitsyn is talking about. So, you know, in a totalitarian society, it's the arguments from authority, it's the punishment that comes along with it, and it is the peer pressure as well. Paul Craig Roberts, who worked in the Reagan administration, on the economic side, headline, could it be a population reduction plot after all? He said, I'm alarmed that today evidence itself has lost its authority. We have agendas that take precedent over truth. We're living under a COVID policy that has no evidence whatsoever in its support. The lethality of the COVID virus, we all know, has been massively overstated. The safety of the vaccine has been massively overstated. Any negative effects have been massively understated. The number of COVID cases, also massively overstated by a defective PCR test. Known cures, such as hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, intentionally blocked from use by official protocol and punished if people do that. So why? He says, is it just profit? Is it just control? Or is there a darker agenda? Despite the known, clear, and incontestable failure of the vaccine to protect against infection and its known dangers, the authorities are pushing forward with more vaccination. This makes no sense whatsoever. Why have the authorities secured the cooperation of U.S. employers, of the military, of hospitals, and of police forces to mandate these COVID manipulations? Because of vaccinations, it's a manipulation. Anyway, why are public authorities using both government and private sectors to coerce vaccination when the public authorities are fully aware that the vaccination does not protect, but it causes health injuries and deaths and spreads the virus? Because even though we know, first we were told, well, the vaccinated people won't spread it, so that's why everybody's got to be vaccinated. Then they reluctantly admitted that the viral load was the same, and now we have the people who developed the AstraZeneca vaccine based on a very broad study of thousands of people in Vietnam. They said, well, the viral load for the vaccinated people is 251 times what it is for the unvaccinated people. So they're actually, it's not that you can't spread it. It's not that you spread it the same as unvaccinated people. The vaccinated people become super spreaders. And yet they continue to push lie number one, position number one. Paul Craig Roberts says, did scientific and medical truth become a conspiracy theory? Yes, they did. By the way, I just want to give you, before we take a break, there is a new place. A lot of people have asked, you know, what's an easy way to look at the VAERS database? Because even though the CDC was required to put up a vaccine adverse events reporting system, as you typically see with government organizations, they do their best to make it difficult to get information out of it and to obscure information. So now there's a new place where you can find this. It's called openvaers.com, openvaers.com, open, V-A-E-R-S.com. I would suggest you go there because the information is a little bit easier to see. Go there, do your own research. You'll see that you can go through and query the database, and you can see samples of it there as well. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Stay away from...
Here's the funniest war ever waged. The war that had to be lost to be won.
Fine thing. The United States and the Grand Duchy of Fenwick are at war, and it takes the FBI to find out about it.
The United States invaded by the smallest country in the world.
Hey, see that big building?
Well?
Well, I saw it first. It's mine.
The Mouse That Roared, the film that united the nations in roars of laughter. Starring an hilarious new personality, Peter Sellers, in three gloriously funny roles. Peter Sellers as the noble statesman.
There isn't a more profitable undertaking for any country than to declare war on the United States and to be defeated.
Peter Sellers as the fearless leader.
Men of Fenwick, when you hear the name of Grand Fenwick, do your hearts swell with pride?
Yes!
And if your country calls, will you rush to enlist?
No!
Peter Sellers as the Grand Duchess.
Do give my love to your president, will you? And Mrs. Coolidge, too.
Meanwhile, back in Grand Fenwick, the happy citizens prepare to welcome the victorious American army. But little do they know the tragic truth.
Well, Your Grace, I know it'll come as a surprise, a pleasant one, I hope, but we sort of won.
Sort of what?
Yeah, that was The Mouse That Roared. Peter Sellers and three roles there. Later he would do multiple roles. Three, I think it was. And Dr. Strangelove as well. The premise of that, they realized exactly what is going on. We'll declare war on the United States, and then we will surrender, and then they will give us lots of stuff. The problem is that they won the war. And they solved that problem in Afghanistan. They won the war, but we still gave them lots of stuff, didn't we? A lot of parallels of that, aren't there? Even to the extent where they're pulling into New York in the harbor, and they look and they see the really tall buildings. See that big building there? That one's going to be mine. That was the Empire State Building. Of course, they didn't have the Twin Towers there. I guess that's what the Afghans said when they rode into the harbor before they took down three buildings or two planes, right? So when we look at this, is this really what's happening? Take a look at some of the videos that have come back as to what we have left behind. If you don't think that the mouse that roared is an apt analogy, here's some of the cash that was left behind. Look at this. Look at this. Look at all of this cash left behind. These are all sealed. It just goes on and on and on. It's stacked a couple of feet high. And I mean, he's opening up one of these, breaking the plastic. It's all shrink-wrapped here and bundles. I don't know how much this is, but he breaks the bundles here. And then he fans this out so you can see it's all $100 bills. Every one of those little things there is filled with $100 bills. And that's a lot more than 10 bills in there. We're looking at several thousand dollars in each one of these things. Just look at the amount of money that was left behind somewhere by the Americans. And, of course, look at the rifles as well in another video. Look at all the rifles left there and stacked up. Yes, Little did they realize, the mouse that roared, that the U.S. would surrender, and they got nothing. But in real life, when you surrender to the little mouse, you give them everything. You give them everything. So when we look at what is happening here and what our LGBT Pentagon has been doing, and I realize that when it comes to the Pentagon, yes, they do embrace the traditional meaning of LGBT, but they also have a new meaning for LGBT. That means leave, give Bagram to Taliban. That's what their LGBT stands for. So then we have the tragedy yesterday, and as I began the program and said, I know everybody wants to hear about what's going on in Afghanistan, but I wanted to talk first and foremost about the global war against everybody on the planet and the number of people that are being killed. We've had 13 soldiers reported dead from these multiple suicide bomb attacks yesterday. And yet we've had 13,000 people just in America reported killed. So 13,000 Americans from these vaccines, these Pentagon vaccines, Operation Warp Speed, delivered by the Pentagon, initially funded and started by DARPA, put through by both Biden and Trump, 13,000 people reported dead. This policy, this withdrawal policy, stupid withdrawal policy, has killed now 13 American soldiers. And again, the body count is fluctuating all over the place, anywhere from 73 to 100 and 100 plus. So, 103, anywhere from 73 to 103, everywhere. The Taliban has been screening people outside the gates, though there was no indication that the Taliban deliberately allowed Thursday's attacks to happen. See, this is the way AP is putting it. You notice how the Taliban's now the good guys? You know, we're giving them intelligence. We're cooperating with them. They become our ally now, even before we're gone. But, you know, we were not supposed to ever leave. We've been there for 20 years, but now they're the good guys. They're guarding the gates for us. They're guarding the gates and letting the appropriate people go through, according to the mainstream press. So, some of the reports yesterday, again, I've seen lower death tolls today, so I'm not sure what the actual death toll is. 13 U.S. troops, 90 Afghans killed was what was reported yesterday. Tyler Rogoway with Aviation Intel on Twitter said, they know exactly where the planes are parked on these runways. They know where everything is. They can see it from a building top, and they have Google Earth as well. Those aircraft are giant gas tanks. The biggest issue with doing this out of urban Kabul International, especially just this one location. That is the imbecility of this policy of withdrawal. The fact that you would go, and you've seen the pictures, I showed them last week. The very first day they started taking off flights, you saw the pictures of people hanging off of the big transport plane, hanging on the outside. As it was flying off, you could see at least two people dropping off, but it was four people eventually that dropped off of the plane as it's flying. They thought they were going to be able to hang on the outside of it, I guess. When the plane landed, you found dead people in the landing gear. And so subsequent to that, a video surfaced from an anonymous U.S. soldier who was in an MRAP at the gun turret, and he's panning around the whole place. And you can see thousands of people lining the single runway out of this airport. And to clear the runway so they don't have people running in front of the plane, running under the plane, jumping on the plane, and so forth, they had helicopters that were preceding the taxiing transports at a very, very low altitude, just barely off the ground to keep people back. It's absolute total chaos. Now, Bagram Air Force Base, where that they abandoned, and I don't know where those stacks of cash and rifles came from, but Bagram Air Force Base is only 30 miles away from the capital of Kabul. And it was a literal city. It had multiple runways. It was fortified. They have put up some real quick fortifications as a wall. They put up some concrete barriers. They put up some concertina wire. They did that real quickly, but it's nothing at all like what they had and abandoned 30 miles away at Bagram. He says, He went on to say, Tyler went on to say, we're now at the point where mortars are the biggest risk to the operation and the personnel at Kabul International. Always has been with this crazy plan. Why? Because the mortars, again, the airplanes are just giant gas tanks. You hit one of them, it's going to blow sky high. And even if you didn't hit one of them, if you put some mortars on the runway, you could close the runway where people couldn't land with a big potholes there. He said they know the time to go after the U.S. military in a in a more vulnerable place than it ever was has been en masse. And the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking. That brings us to the press conference yesterday that everybody is talking about. Nobody can make an excuse for this. Even Matt Drudge has a picture on the Drudge Report of the president in essentially a fetal position. But here's how this whole thing began.
Wishes to get out of Afghanistan. We will find them and we will get them out. Ladies and gentlemen, they gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
He doesn't even have the presence of mind to say, to try to pretend that he's not being controlled. They gave me a list here, and the first person I was instructed to call, totally controlled and totally mentally incompetent. It's not even necessary anymore to do a test. It's apparent to everyone, including the left, which is a very concerning thing. Kamala Harris is the person who's going to step in place. You know this guy's not going to last for 4 years. It was never intended that he would last for 4 years. And, of course, he's totally controlled, and Kamala Harris is not going, she's going to be totally controlled as well. But they're going to rush through their agenda with her without any opposition whatsoever. So then the next aspect of this is he's finishing the press conference. He calls on Peter Doocy, son of Steve Doocy, who is on Fox and Friends in the Morning. And Peter Doocy has kind of become what Sam Donaldson was to the Reagan administration. Peter Doocy has become that to the Biden administration, a thorn in his side. So he introduces, says, "Hey, you know, one of the most interesting people here. Let me show you this back and forth engagement between the two of them." And this is where Biden, on a follow-up question, assumes the fetal position.
Mr. President, there had not been a U.S. service member killed in combat in Afghanistan since February of 2020. You set a deadline, you pulled troops out, you sent troops back in, and now 12 Marines are dead. You said the buck stops with you. Do you bear any responsibility for the way that things have unfolded in the last 2 weeks?
I bear responsibility for fundamentally all that's happened of late. But here's the deal. You know, I wish you'd one day say these things. You know as well as I do that a former president made a deal with the Taliban that he would get all American forces out of Afghanistan by May 1. In return, the commitment was made, and that was a year before. In return, he was given a commitment that the Taliban would continue to attack others, but would not attack any American forces. Remember that? I'm being serious. I'm asking you a question. No, wait a minute. I'm asking you a question. Is that accurate, the best of you or not?
What? Do you think that people have an issue?
There he is. Fetal position. Or is he praying? I don't know.
I think they have an issue that people are likely to get hurt. Some, as we've seen, have gotten killed, and that it is messy.
It is messy. You notice, and he comes back on a follow-up question. He says the reason nobody was dying was because Trump made this agreement that we're going to pull out. And as I've said before, why didn't Trump just pull out? It was clear that there was no military solution, Rand Paul and others were saying that all last year. There is no military position. People anonymously in the Pentagon were saying that, but they were afraid to go on record to say it. Rand Paul went on record to say it. Pompeo knew it. He wanted to stay there, but he knew it couldn't be sustained. They didn't want to have this whole thing come crashing down on them, and it would have if they did not make a deal. And so they made a deal, but they didn't do it themselves. They pushed it off to the next administration because I think that Trump, in spite of all his protestations about how badly he wanted to be president, how badly he wants to be president again, he wanted to shove off this mess that he had created to somebody else, not just in Afghanistan, but primarily this pandemic mess. He did what he was told, and this is professional wrestling, and it was time for him to tap out the other guy and to let the tag team come back in, which is Biden. And so he passed this hot potato to him, you know, this musical chairs, and Biden was going to, instead of getting out in May, he decides that he's going to extend it to September 11th, the 20th anniversary. Of course, he's not in control. The Pentagon is not in control of the situation in Afghanistan. But here on a follow-up question is what he had to say. Again, doubling down and saying, well, you know, the reason that this didn't happen was because we had this agreement, and that's why they didn't attack us. And so why exactly are they now our allies and we're working with them? Here's the follow-up question.
The reason why, whether my friend will acknowledge it or has reported it, the reason why there were no attacks on Americans, as you said, from the date until I came into office, was because the commitment was made by President Trump, I will be out by May 1st. In the meantime, you agree not to attack any Americans. That was the deal. That's why no American was attacked.
And you said, a few days ago, you said you squarely stand by your decision to pull out.
Yes, I do. Because look at it this way, folks. And I have another meeting, for real. But imagine where we'd be if I had indicated on May the 1st I was not going to renegotiate an evacuation date. We were going to stay there. I'd have only one alternative: pour thousands of more troops back into Afghanistan to fight a war that we had already won relative to why the reason we went in the first place.
Oh, so you see, we've already won that war. We won it. Did you realize that? When you look at this, do you realize that we won the war? Mission accomplished, right? Well, maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe they did want something this chaotic and destructive. But yeah, so it's a victory. It was won, according to him, by people before him. People didn't die, according to him, because of the agreement that Trump had. And so then the question remains, why did you exit in the way that you did? It's absolute insanity and incompetence, and it's because these people in the Pentagon, these bureaucrats, don't really seem to care. Now, what they care about is the LGBT agenda, not just leave and abandon the Bagram Air Force Base to the Taliban. Biden, as the headline from Zero says, delivers a surreal press conference. He vows to hunt down ISIS, and he blames Trump, and he blames the generals, and of course, Trump and the generals are to blame for a lot of this. Trump could have taken this thing down. Any of these presidents could have taken it down. The Obama administration could have taken it down. Bush and Blair could have not lied us into this war, because this war was based on the lie of September 11th. Everything about it was a lie. So they're still continuing to lie, even as it comes crashing down on them. So the U.S. vows that the flights will continue in spite of this attack. But again, when it comes to those who are being left behind, whether it's American citizens or people who had worked with America, they have a policy now. Don't ask. Don't care. We're not going to tell you where these people are. We're not going to do anything to go get them. As I pointed out the last couple of days, the British and other countries were taking expeditions to go out and pull their people back in to rescue people. Not so with the American government. people in charge there said, we don't want to offend the Taliban. We've got an agreement with the Taliban, and we're going to stick to that agreement. And the agreement that they made with the Taliban is more important to them than the lives of their allies and the lives of American citizens. It's just that simple. They have the agreement that they made with the people they've been fighting for 20 years is more important to them. So it is a don't ask, don't care. In terms of people continuing to point the obvious insanity of leaving Bagram Air Force Base, and not just leaving it, but leaving it in the middle of the night and not telling your so-called allies what you're doing, and then leaving all that stuff that you've seen so many different ways behind. I mean, they left biometric equipment. They've left laptops that have access to secure databases that, of course, I don't know. I mean, these Taliban, they're pretty wily. They can fly these planes at speeds and altitudes that nobody else can fly. And they can take down three steel skyscrapers with only two planes, one of them not even hit. So maybe they can get through to these laptops, but I guarantee you that these laptops are being looked at in China and Russia and elsewhere. And it's, so it, then you see the cash, you see all the weapons. They're taking joyrides in Black Hawk helicopters. And so Biden says, well, the generals, they did this. It was their best military judgment to do a Bagram withdrawal. He says, as for the tactical questions of how to conduct an evacuation or war, I gather up all the major military personnel that are in Afghanistan, the commanders as well as at the Pentagon, and I ask for their best military judgment. What would be the most efficient way to accomplish the mission? Do you think he really did that? Do you think he had a big confab with all the people on the ground there as well as the Pentagon? Yeah. And he said, and it was their conclusion, the military concluded that Bagram was not much value added. That it was wiser to focus on Kabul, where there is a single runway and an unprotected commercial airline, and to just leave all that stuff, and to leave, you want to talk about value added, it's what they left behind. Yeah, so leave, give Bagram to the Taliban. It was the LGBT agenda right there. They have, a lot of people are upset about the fact that not only are they afraid that they will offend the Taliban, but now they have given the Taliban a list of Americans and Afghan allies that they want evacuated. As many people said, of course, that's just going to be a kill list. So, as the policy is to not go out and to rescue Americans or Afghan allies, as the policy is to turn Christians away at the airport, and that is happening as well. Desperate Afghan Christians turned away at the airport, aid group says. This is coming from Catholic News Agency. They said it seems at present as if no one is getting any priority unless they have some sort of special connection inside of the airport. I was told by contacts from various groups working to rescue these people who are still in danger in Afghanistan, who must remain anonymous, that the State Department, at least at a certain point, was not implementing the lists that they require the organizations to compile, even if the lists were sent to them multiple times, said Faith McDonald, who is director at an Anglican nonprofit ministry group based in Virginia. So they're not paying any attention to it. It doesn't matter how many times you fill out the paperwork and send it into them. They're turning people away. And so the best that the Pentagon can do is to give a list of these people, Americans and Afghan allies, and maybe Christians. Here's a list of Christians. Could you go get these? Oh, yes, we will get the Christians. Yeah, we'll get the Americans, too. And we'll get those Afghans who helped you. Mm-hmm. And then they'll come back and they'll say, we found them. They're dead. Oh, well, I guess we can leave then. So they, as they pack up and fly off, right? Outrage over the U.S. ambassador's heartless comments about Americans trapped in Afghanistan. And this is why I said their new policy is don't ask, don't care. This is Ross Wilson. He is a U.S. diplomat. And he was being interviewed on CBS News. Nora O'Donnell asked Wilson, who is the acting U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. He's just acting like one. Now, he's the temporary replacement. I guess they figured they wouldn't go through a whole process of putting somebody else in there. Anyway, she said, why didn't the U.S. get Americans and our Afghani friends out before the Taliban were able to take control from Kabul? He said, we put out repeated warnings every 3 weeks to Americans going back to, I think, March or April. Each one in stronger terms. Leave now. Leave immediately. So it's their fault. Don't ask. We don't care. Well, they may not be getting the Americans and the Afghan allies out, but they are getting people who are on the terror watch list out. At least 100 of the Afghans evacuated are on the terror watch lists. Is this the point? Will they take these people straight to the Pentagon like they did Osama bin Laden? What are they going to use these people for? How will they use them in some soon-to-be-done false flag, as you can imagine? The Afghans who've been flown to Qatar are candidates for entry into the U.S. through special immigration visas. The U.S. official told Defense One that at least 100 of them have been flagged as possible matches to intelligence agency watch lists by the Defense Department's automated biometric identification system. Well, we'll see. Will they bring them in anyway? So many of the people that came out had absolutely no ID. Maybe they're now going to ID them. If it was a functional military, a functional government, if they didn't have other agendas of chaos, I would assume, well, at this point, they're going to check them in their biometric database. They've been doing that. They left that equipment behind, but they've got other equipment. Yeah, they're flush with cash. Just print some more of that paper money that you saw in pallets. Unbelievable amount of that money. The CENTCOM commander reveals that U.S. intelligence is sharing intelligence in an operation with the Taliban. You know, we did that with Saddam Hussein. We told him where his opponents were so he could gas them. That was the weapons of mass destruction that he actually had, poisonous gas. So that's what we're doing there. We're working with the Taliban now to help them shut down any opposition and to help them to locate Americans, Christians, Afghans who helped the military. The Taliban, meanwhile, is warning women not to go to work. The militants, they said they need equality training after they are gang raping entire villages. As I pointed out yesterday, you are told that when the Taliban come to town, you will put an X on the door. If you have someone who is a female up to the age of 25, so they can take them. If they are older than 25, then they have other uses for the women as slaves. The men they'll kill, pretty much. Oh, and if they find the females and you didn't have an X there, they will for sure kill everybody. If they find a Bible or anything Christian on your phone or any indication of any of that, they execute you on the spot. They have a list of Christians who have been there. They're going down that list. And now, of course, they've got another list that the U.S. government has provided them. The U.S. government, as it put in this puppet government in Afghanistan, that puppet government under the U.S. government was the second worst persecution of Christians in the world, second only to North Korea. Women need chaperones, and music is now banned in Afghanistan, they say. So I guess that party that we saw last week, where you had those guys dancing, I guess that was just a momentary lapse. Of course, it was only men who were dancing, but no more music. Music has got to be out. We have Taliban dressing up as special forces. They found the gear that was left behind by American special forces, and they put it on. You know, there's a little bit more involved in a costume here. Just saying. It's kind of like the old expression, all hat, no cattle. Wearing a special forces uniform does not a special forces person make. But that's their, you know, they're taunting everybody as to what they've been able to do. And finally, in terms of the Afghan information, the Taliban has secured the world's largest lithium deposits after the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. You know, this is something that was really not talked about in polite media company, the fact that we were there for the lithium, the fact that we were there for the opium, you know, the poppies and other things. We're guarding the fields. The Taliban had taken the opium production down to where it was only supplying about 10% of the world's opium. And then under our assistance, we got it back up into the high 90s. And, of course, it was also lithium, which is being used for all these electric car batteries. It's been more than a decade since Zero Hedge wrote, and this is a Zero Hedge article, the U.S. discovers, quote-unquote, nearly $1 trillion in mineral deposits in Afghanistan. I mean, we don't need $1 trillion, do we? Who cares? I mean, we're spending, you know, $4 trillion last year, $5 trillion so far on the budget. I mean, we just print up some more of that paper money. And like, we have so much of it, we just leave it behind in stacks, compressed stacks. So who needs another $1 trillion of minerals? So we highlighted the colossal untapped mineral deposits that reside in Afghanistan. Biden's decision to go rapidly, completely withdraw from Afghanistan makes even less strategic sense if readers go back to the 2010 post, where we quoted, quote, confessions of an economic hitman, the 21st century paradigm. American officials also recognized the mineral discoveries will almost certainly have a double-edged impact. Instead of bringing peace, the newfound mineral wealth could lead the Taliban to battle even more fiercely to regain control of the country, which is why it'll be best to have the U.S. military not only stay in Afghanistan indefinitely, but to get a million-man reinforcement surge. So, yeah, it was never about the opium trade, never about the war on terror. They believe it was about lithium. It was about all of those things. It was about the arbitrary use of power. There was absolutely no mineral resources. There was no oil. There was no lithium in Vietnam. Why did we do that? Because they could. Because the military-industrial complex doesn't care about money. They don't care about lives. They only care about testing their weapons. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Joining us in the next hour, we're going to have Jason Goodman of Crowdsource the Truth. We're going to get a follow-up to an interesting story. He got into a lawsuit. He was sued by the Emmys because he did a parody of the Emmy Award where they have this winged figure holding up a ball. And he turned it into a Corona ball, which is parody, which is protected speech. And they said, you're damaging our brand. No, well, they damaged their brand when they gave an Emmy to Cuomo. And so we're going to get a follow-up on what is going on with that lawsuit as well, because it's kind of interesting to see what is happening there as they had to pull back their award that they gave to Cuomo. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, and by the way, I had on my desk here the person who had sent me pictures of this cache. It was from Cameron. I want to thank Cameron for sending that. And I forgot that Cameron said, I know how much is in each of those packets that were opened up. again, looking at this, each of these little bricks that you see there is $10,000. So they used to work in a bank. And it's amazing how brand new bills, and that's what these are, brand new bills. He says, amazing how thin brand new bills can be stacked. And each of these stacks is the way they gave them to him was worth $10,000. And just look at the stacks everywhere. It's absolutely amazing to see this much money left behind. I don't know how many millions of dollars that is, but that's just some of the stuff that we have now left behind. I want to take a look at America, not just America, but the world held hostage, before we go to Jason Goodman. Let's start with France, because the headline from WND says, Mark of the COVID Beast. A store is denying people food and water without a vaccine passport. We're on the cusp of this happening in California and New York. They're talking about denying people from getting into any stores without exception. And that's exactly what has been imposed in France. French supermarkets have hired bouncers in order to deny people basic human rights to food and water because they didn't get the right government permission slip, said Luc Radowski. The alarming video that was out a week ago, you can see that happening, and we'll talk about the follow-up to it. A lot of videos showing security guards pushing elderly people, pushing women out who simply wanted to be able to shop for food. The video that Luke tweeted out a week ago shows a security guard brutally grabbing a masked woman and throwing her out of the store like a trash bag. She's outraged by the abusive manhandling, and she yells at the security guard. After she leaves, a man approaches the bouncer and scolds him for not allowing the female shopper to get alimentaire, the French word for food. The video is evocative of the Mark of the Beast, where you must, you know, have the government permission, the government mark, or whatever it is that they require to buy, sell, to trade, to do anything. And one pastor says their sovereign reach will require that all those who desire to transact commerce or business, buying or selling anything, to bear the mark of the beast. Should they fail to have the mark, they will be ostracized. So whether this is the mark of the beast or preparation for the mark of the beast that's coming on, you decide. It is the same in principle, of course. And again, global in its nature. That was a quote from Reverend Darren Wood, pastor of First Baptist Church of Midland, Texas. And he concluded his commentary by saying COVID vaccine is not the mark of the beast, but he gave considerable respectful thought as to why many, many people are asking and raising the question. Even as a metaphor, it is unsettling. Chuck Baldwin did a speech where he said, yeah, it definitely is. A lot of people, like Catherine Austin Fitz, believes that it is. It is wrong. Whatever it is wrong. And so they've pulled back a little bit, but let's take a look at what they pull back from and why they pull back. LifeSite News headline, let them buy cake. COVID passes no longer required for superstores in Versailles. Now, that's only one region. They have been putting these restrictions on retail in all these different French regions as long as they find 200 cases of people that fail the test. That is the trigger that makes this lockdown compulsory. And when you look at the headline, let them buy cake, you got to ask yourself, how much longer are people going to put up with this? Of course, you know, the French Revolution happened because of the massive disparity, the elitist arrogance, whether or not Marie Antoinette said let them eat cake as she was told the people were starving, whether or not she actually said that. That perfectly summarizes the elitist arrogance at that time and at this time as well. And it's even more arrogant in a sense. We have the money to buy this stuff for the time being. They're going to make sure we don't have the money, but we have the money to buy this stuff. They refuse. They prohibit us from buying it, even if we have the money. Those people did not have the money because their economic system, because they were blocked out in other ways, and they're going to take the money away from us as well. That is the objective, to make us as poor as French peasants. So the question is, are we going to allow them to do that to us? Are the French going to allow them to do that? So they took this to court in Versailles. And only in Versailles have they been able to overturn this. These orders are still in effect in a lot of other French jurisdictions. The Administrative Tribunal of Versailles. Think about that. They have they got three people sitting there deciding this. The Administrative Tribunal of Versailles has suspended the order from the prefect, the local representative of the French government, that you had to show what they call a sanitary pass in order to access 14 large shopping centers in the department store area. Now, what's interesting about this is that the basis for overturning this is not the idea that after a year and a half, we're now going to starve people out who haven't gotten the vaccines. Because that's really what the basis is. And to say, no, that's wrong. We're not going to starve people out if they haven't gotten the vaccine we mandate, the untested vaccine. The untested vaccine produced by DARPA and big pharmaceutical companies, injected with cash by Trump, pushed by Trump and by Biden around the world. If you don't get that untested experimental vaccine, for which we have an unbelievably long list of people who have been harmed and killed by it, if you don't get that, we're going to starve you out. Do you understand the level of war globally that our masters, our rulers, our arrogant elite are conducting against us? They're doing this with massive propaganda so we don't grab the guillotines and come after them. That was what Michael Bloomberg said. He said, well, you know, we're going to take everything from everybody. You know, you had the farmers and we took stuff away from them. We had the the Industrial Revolution changed us from an agrarian society. And then those people, they were easily replaced because, you know, farmers are just stupid, he said. Then we had the people who worked in our factories, and they're just stupid, and we can replace them. And now those of us who are smart, we're going to get rid of all these jobs, and we just have to find a way that we can economically pacify these people so they don't come after us with their guillotines. That's what Michael Bloomberg said when he was running for president. The arrogance of that guy. Saying that as he's running for president. And that's exactly what is happening. And people have been pacified. They don't understand what's going on. They're sleepwalking into this tyranny where they're going to starve us into slavery. Over the last few days, videos of people being pushed back by police or security guards from French supermarkets where they wanted to buy food and other basic necessities without presenting the required sanitary pass have gone viral. In some cases, law enforcement officers have reacted violently against elderly people and women who just wanted to buy food in a store. So whenever there is a region where the rate of infection is higher than 200 people per 100,000 inhabitants, think about that. That's absurd, especially considering the fact that these tests are bogus. Tests are magnifying any viral debris by a factor of a trillion, 2 to the 40th power. They double the sample that they have, they double it 40 times. That's a trillion. That's what a cycle threshold of 40 means. So the PCR test is an imaginary test. And not only that, but they've admitted that they're going to stop using it by the end of the year because it can't distinguish between, wait for it, a cold virus and COVID. It's been a lie the entire time. And I'm telling you, they can't distinguish between COVID and a virus. They can't distinguish either between COVID and the Alpha variant or the Delta variant or whatever else imaginary thing they're telling you. That requires genetic sequencing. And they've said they don't have the tests for that, and they're not doing it. By order of the authorities, several hundred shopping centers and large big box supermarkets closed their doors to people without the sanitary pass on August the 16th in a dozen of France's 100 department stores. And the numbers rose as a campaign of massive testing led to finding more and more COVID positive. See, it's the test. The test. The fake test. All I have to do is give you a test and look at it. Ah, we're positive. You're coming with us. I'm not sick. You're coming with us. My test says so. I don't have anything to do with it. It's the test that said that. So it's this third party, this thing that's ruling us. We're being ruled by the virus. We're being ruled by the test. No, you're being ruled by elitists, tyrants, and their minions. But what's interesting about this is, as I said, they didn't pull this back because this is a heinous policy to starve people out. They pulled it back in Versailles because they said people are going to go to the small shops and we're just hurting the big box retailers. You understand, this particular policy focusing on shutting down the big supermarkets was doing the opposite of what the globalist elite want to do. See, they wanted to starve out, and largely did, most of the small retailers last year. And I said the reason for that, the reason that they were coming in the U.S. and elsewhere, the reason that Trump and his minions, Republican and Democrat governors and health departments, the reason that they were shutting down quote-unquote non-essential businesses was to make sure that for the most part nobody was going to survive except for the big box Wall Street supported people who would do exactly as the government wished. Their fascist partners, the Pfizer fascists, P-fascists, you can spell it, put a P in front of it. So these fascist partners, these big box Wall Street companies, were presumed to be the survivors. Unfortunately for them, they misunderestimated, as George W. Bush would say, the spunkiness of the small businessman and the entrepreneur and the black market that's coming. Through force and through prohibition and through lockdown and all these other things and throwing out the law, they've not been able to stop the flow of illicit drugs. And believe me, they're not going to stop the flow of things like food. And this is what you need to understand, what you're going to do to make alliances to provide for yourself, to provide for other people to the extent that you can, to make connections to people, because their intention is to starve you out. And you can't count on these small businesses staying in there. But at this point in time, the tribunal in Versailles looked at this and said, well, wait a minute, they're going to go to smaller places, and those smaller places will be more expensive and probably not policed as well, and so people might get sick faster. So we're going to shut this thing down. They shut it down because they wanted to protect the big box businesses. The big box businesses, they thought they had a point of control, and they don't. In a previous unsuccessful procedure in the Toulouse region, the local administrative tribunal judged that the prefect's decision was correct because it had taken into account that people could find alternative solutions to obtain essential goods within the population center. The 13,000 square meter Toulouse supermarket was ordered to continue checking the sanitary pass and was even prevented from letting in clients by a special door, which they would gain entry in to access to other shops in the shopping center. It's like a speakeasy, I guess, right? It has been obliged to post 8 security guards at the entrance to control visitors, and the director of the facility says it's going to cost him about $30,000 every month to pay for these security guards, and he expects that his traffic is going to fall 30 to 40%. See, this is why I don't think it's going to continue. Now they're trying to roll this out and punish people who are shutting down the big boxes, but they're going to have people slipping through the cracks, and that's what we're going to continue to do. This policy of prohibition is not going to survive. We've had the drug war now for 50 years. It's gotten increasingly violent. Our government has gotten increasingly corrupt, but they haven't done anything at all to the flow of illicit drugs. As a matter of fact, every time you do prohibition, whether it was the alcohol prohibition or whether it's this prohibition, the things that you're prohibiting, you wind up getting more potent versions of it. You got people went from consuming basically beer and wine during alcohol prohibition to going to hard liquor. And during 50 years of drug prohibition, you've had very much more potent strains of marijuana come out, but you've had other things that have been invented as well, like meth, like bath salts and things like that, that are far worse than anything we had before. That's a product of prohibition. So when they try to prohibit guns, you can better believe that's going to unleash a free market of innovation, and you're going to have some amazingly lethal weapons that are going to come out of that. And the same thing is going to be true when they try, especially when they try to shut people down for food. that may actually be the thing that blows up in their face. So some of the people who are being shut out of restaurants in France are doing this. They're doing a French picnic. They're actually taking their food and eating it in front of the stores in a picnic environment. Look at how many people there are here. And this, folks, is exactly what we need to do. We need to just get in their face and live our lives, right? They could have gone there and they could have pushed their way into the store. They could have gotten violent. It would have given an excuse to the police to escalate that because you would be playing their game of violence and intimidation. But instead, these people peacefully grab their food and they eat it in the street. We're not going to be stopped. We're not going to be kicked out. They eat their food in front of the vax-only restaurants. I like that. Britons have now turned critical of the government's pandemic response. In a recent poll that was conducted, came out yesterday, 48% of people polled in it thought the government was handling this whole thing poorly. Only 48%. But that is up 3 points from July, so it went from 45 to 48. Whereas the people who thought the government was doing a good job dropped from 49 to 43%. So at least it's trending in the right direction. I can't believe that it's evenly divided after what they've seen in Britain. But again, it was in Britain where you had between 500,000 and 1 million people take to the streets on London immediately. Boris Johnson said, we'll have a Freedom Day. How about that? And then on Freedom Day, he announced that they were going to be rolling out all kinds of vaccine requirements as well. The fully vaccinated in Australia will be allowed to leave their home for, wait for it, 1 hour of recreational time. Isn't that nice? And at the same time, they're saying this with a straight face. They say, we're so grateful for every person who comes forward to get vaccinated because the more jabs we get into arms, the sooner we can lift restrictions. These people have been jabbed twice in their arms. And what they get for that is 1 hour outside every day. And we're putting ankle monitors on high school students. We're imprisoning everybody. We've turned the entire planet into a prison. Appeasing dictators never works. These people have gotten the 2 shots. And what do they get for that? They get to go out 1 hour a day. They'll probably have to wear masks as well. Also in Australia, we see a church, Christ Embassy Church in Blacktown. And the pastor, his name is Marvin Osagi. This is a congregation of people from Nigeria, for the most part. So they were holding a service. He told the congregation, he said, we declare the lockdowns are over. In the name of Jesus, lockdowns are over. In the cities of New South Wales, in the name of Jesus, we declare the lockdowns are over. In the name of Jesus, we refuse every lockdown in our cities. In the name of Jesus, go ahead and pray, he told the congregation. And then the cops arrived. And in the name of COVID, you know, the real, what they believe is really the king of the world. You know, it's a crown, right? It's a crown. So this ruling crown, this virus that has been, this false idol, this fake god, that has been created by the world's leaders, that we all must bow down and worship that crown. That arrives, and they handed out $35,000 in fine. they were handing out, it was 30 adults were fined $1,000, and the church itself was fined $5,000. Police also said there were no QR code check-in system to be used by the church, because you got a report everywhere that you're going to the government all the time. You got to check in with them every place that you go in Australia. I think that all of us feel the disappointment when people just blatantly ignore what is in press, in place, rather, said the premier there at New South Wales. Yeah, they feel disappointed when people blatantly ignore the emperor who has no pandemic. They fear people who meet without fear. They fear the fearless because fear is their weapon of control. And we're going to see this happening again now because LA is going back into this vaccine mandates and stuff. This is round 2. You're going to see this come to a head, I believe, again in LA where you had John MacArthur, for example, one church, probably the one that people know the most, over 7,000 people a week meeting there without any of these refusing to obey any of these restrictions. They've been holding the fines that have accumulated with them, tens of thousands of dollars in fines. They've been holding that in escrow. And so now they're going to get another crack at this church with their new vaccine mandates, because they cannot have people showing that you are bowing down and worshiping a false god, because that's what this amounts to. These are false governments. They have given you a false, you know, they didn't do this to you. See, Bloomberg didn't do this to you. He didn't destroy your life, take everything from you. Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, they didn't do that. Davos didn't do it. The UN didn't do it. The American government, the British government, the Australian government, you name the French government, any, the governments didn't do it to you. These individual globalists and their organizations didn't do it to you. It was the virus that did it to you. The virus. And when I look at what is happening there in Australia, I wonder if they were turned in by a snitch, because we've had a Chinese city that has begun paying $15,000 rewards for snitching on any gatherings, any public gatherings. People in Canada, and probably in Australia as well, and in America, are more than happy to do it for free, because it makes them feel powerful. They're part of the system, and they bought into it. And they can be actually worse than the public health officials who know this whole thing is a fraud, because those people who are snitching on people, they believe it's for real. They're the true believers. I mean, these other people are a high priesthood, and they know that there's nothing there. They know that Dagon is nothing. We're going to see Dagon on his knees, and we're going to see these people on their knees before long as well. But, you know, you'd look at in China, $15,000 reward for snitching on a gathering. That would make pretty good sense for the government to do that in Australia. You know, just going in that one church, they got $35,000 in fines they assessed against people. That's a $20,000 profit. You pay the snitch $15,000 and you keep $20,000? Yeah, can see them doing that a lot. Another official in Australia, cop, says it's always disheartening and disappointing when you see people blatantly take it upon themselves to contradict what we know works. Do you know that it works? Because according to all of your rituals that you forced on everybody, you're still telling us that it didn't work. Because you're telling us we still got to do them after a year and a half. This is not about flattening a curve. This is about flattening society, so they could stomp on our face forever. Obviously, it does not work. And obviously, if you keep doing the same thing, like these lockdowns and these masks and so forth and so on, you keep doing that over and over again, something that doesn't work, but you keep doing it over and over again, what's the definition of insanity? That's the definition of insanity. Keep doing the same thing over and over again and think you're going to get different results. This is from a writer who is in the UK, but he's Australian originally, Damian Wilson. He says, fury over COVID rules is finally helping Aussies to lose their long-held, unhealthy respect for authority. But let me say to you, as this guy talks about the history of people, the rugged people who founded Australia, and how they were pacified, I want you to think about this and see if you don't see the same thing in your country, whether it's America, Canada, or some European country, if the same thing didn't happen to you. He said, my often malleable compatriots down under are starting to fight back as they realize their government is clueless and they've been nuts to swallow the zero COVID strategy. And again, you know, can't have a single case anywhere with this magnifying PCR test that can't tell a cold from COVID. And now we're coming up, guess what? To cold and flu season. This is why, you know, they sweep all of the statistics about people who have any respiratory disease, whether it's cold, flu, RSV, any of that, all of that disappeared last year, of course. And all those cases became COVID because their tests can't distinguish between them, and they wanted to make a case for COVID. Anyway, by any measure, he said, Australia has not enjoyed this pandemic. And that has nothing to do with the number of deaths, because at less than 1,000 deaths for a population of 25 million, that's over a year and a half, it has, for the main, escaped. Where it has really suffered, however, is in identifying exactly what level of threat this poses to the population, and then acting accordingly. There are the stern warnings from state leaders that would be hilarious if they weren't so serious about enjoying sunset on the beach and removing a mask to drink beer, dodging errant footballs while watching a game, and most recently a local council deciding to shoot 15 rescue dogs rather than allowing volunteers from an animal shelter to travel for their collection in case they spread the virus. That's the level of insanity we're looking at, says Damian Wilson. Meanwhile, it was humans on the receiving end at a so-called freedom rally in Melbourne, where violence between protesters and police led to officers firing rounds of pepper balls, the most powerful non-lethal force at their disposal, into the anti-lockdown crowd, and rubber bullets, I would add. Anyway, he says, it was a sign that patience with being treated like sheep might finally have snapped. I began to wonder what happened to the rebellious larrikins, the famed Aussie battlers, the brave diggers, the pioneering new Australians, who just a generation or so ago left their homes and families in Italy, Greece, Vietnam, to and beyond to pursue their dreams in what they called the lucky country. It seemed that a subservience to the ruling class, an unhealthy respect for authority, had overwhelmed my homeland. How did it happen? Same way it's happened around the world. The cult of safety. This is why Eric Peters has been spot on. We've seen this. Anybody who focuses on automobiles has seen this illustrated endlessly. He said, first there were the anti-litter, keep Australia beautiful, keep fit, life, be in it signs, skin cancer prevention campaigns of his childhood. He said, then there was mandatory wearing of bike helmets that came into force in the early 90s. And then there were the strict limits on gun ownership after a massacre that left 35 people dead in 1996. Only 35 people dead. And they took all the guns. Think about that. And how long did they have guns where that didn't happen? But one event, and they use that to deprive people of their liberty. That's how these people operate. We have long been suckers for any message whose central premise is follow this prescriptive guidance and you'll be totally free to enjoy the great outdoors without dying from cancer, obesity, bike accident, or gunshot. And that explains why the heavy-handed COVID rules have faced such little resistance in the USA as well, say. The problem public health officials are facing now, however, is that the message is no longer working, because Australians know they lied. So the skeptical public is starting to think, these galas haven't got a bloody clue, and they're right. And so what are we going to do about this? I mean, even in Australia, you're seeing the same thing. Just as we saw a 30% increase in suicides here in the U.S., they're seeing the same thing in Australia. That is by design. And, of course, so is the bankrupting of our society. Yesterday, we had another development. We've talked about how, going back to last fall, you had the CDC illegally assuming. I mean, again, let's just point out the CDC. It's like the Federal Reserve. They pretend to be a government organization, but they're a private organization. The CDC is a 501c3 corporation, and they take donations, they do other things. There is no constitutional authority for them. And like the Federal Reserve, they profit from what they do. You know, they hold patents, they sell vaccines. The biggest seller of vaccines, the CDC is. And so the CDC jumped out and said, we're going to stop all foreclosures and evictions. And they did it last fall. It was staggering, the usurpation of power. Trump didn't even mention it, and still, I don't think, ever mentioned it. They extended it several times. Don't tell me that somebody like Donald Trump, who is a landlord, who is a builder, who is very aware of what's going on in commercial real estate, don't tell me that he didn't know anything about this. And so when it came up before courts, you had four court losses. Finally, they got a win, and so they ran with that. But you had four losses with lower courts and one appeal court, and then they had a win. And it went before the Supreme Court back in June or July, and the court was divided 5-4 to allow it to continue. However, the deciding vote was Kavanaugh, and Kavanaugh said they clearly do not have the legal authority. He agreed with 4 of the 5 lower courts. He said they don't have the legal authority, but they said they're going to get rid of it in less than 30 days, so we'll let it stand because it would be disruptive to stop it. It was like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And of course, before the 30 days ended, they extended it again. They have no intention of ever getting rid of that because they're going to end, instead, private property rights and contracts, and they're going to usurp their power to be what they see themselves as, the real power. You know, nobody has changed in the CDC, really. I mean, you got Walensky in there as the director, but the CDC remains, just as the Pentagon remains, just as the military-industrial complex remains, the NSA, the CIA. They are the same people, administration after administration. When you go back and look at the ATF, the same people, you know, the Randy Weaver situation happened under George H.W. Bush. And then just a few months later, after Clinton is in charge, you have Waco. But it was the same people at the ATF that did both of those, right? You know, Janet Reno, they made her the poster child for all that. But it was the people at the ATF were the same on both of those incidents. So anyway, now it's gone before the Supreme Court. 6-3, they shut it down finally this time. I think, well, actually, I know, Roberts and Kavanaugh this time have switched over. So you just have the three most liberal judges wrote a dissent saying stripping the federal protections may result in crowded living conditions where the doubly contagious Delta variant threatens to spread quickly. That's a quote. It's doubly contagious. You know what this is? This is Animal House, where the Delta fraternity was told by the university president, you're on double secret probation. This Delta variant is a double secret lie. It's doubly dangerous. It's just double. And it's a secret. I can't tell you if you got Delta variant. Oh, it's a national security secret. Even if we have the test, even if we do the test, and we don't have that many tests, very few of them have been done, but we don't have the time or the money to do them anyway. But even if we did a test and tell you that, you know, we can't tell you that if it's a Delta variant, we won't tell you. It's double secret probation, Delta. And these guys taking all this stuff, wouldn't it be funny if you realize these guys actually pull this from Animal House? The homeless people, by the way, this last year and a half did not die. They're still with us. The poor you will have with you always, said Jesus. By the way, Travis, do we have Jason? We do? Okay. All right. Without any further ado, we got Jason on the line. I don't want him holding any longer. I'll pick this back up after the interview. And so we'll take a quick break to tell you where you can find us and how you can support us. Really do need your support, folks. If you want to support us, as I mentioned yesterday, and I saw that we had a few more people subscribe on Subscribestar, you can start with a $5 donation per month. And, you know, we do 15 hours of content a week, so it's about 60 hours if you want to use that, as much of that as you wish. But, you know, you can help us with just a $5 donation. I mentioned it yesterday because we had somebody ask about it. I saw that we had a few more people there. Subscribestar, you can make a single contribution or you can subscribe on a regular basis. If you do, make sure that your credit card has not kicked out of the system because it changed or expired. We have no way of knowing that or notifying you. But we have other ways that you can support us as well. You can send money via Zelle if your bank supports it. You can just send it to our email address. And you can set up that way. We also have Cash App. We also have Bitcoin. And we have a P.O. Box number that's there. But here's information about how you can find us at thedavidknightshow.com. That's where you can find where the live broadcasts are, both video and audio, and where the video and audio archives are. We have podcasts that go out as well. So all those links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com, as well as how you can support us. We'll be right back with Jason Goodman at crowdsourcethetruth.org.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars,
let's go,
and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Is Jason Goodman at Crowdsource the Truth. It's crowdsourcethetruth.org is where you can find and support him. He is also funded by his listeners. And I wanted to get Jason on because his case, there's so many things that have happened with Cuomo, with the Emmys. But the Emmys, as I pointed out before, I'll let Jason kind of give you a synopsis of where this was. But he's being sued. And it's a very important First Amendment case because they're suing him for a parody that he did, which is protected speech. So joining us now is Jason Goodman, crowdsourcethetruth.org. Thank you for joining us, Jason.
David, thank you for having me back on. It's been a little while since we last spoke. It's my first time on the news show, so congratulations.
Well, thanks
so
for coming on.
People, yeah, and thanks for having me. I'm so glad that people are supporting you on Subscribestar. That's been a great platform for me as well. And, you know, you and I had a great conversation last time about the Television Academy, the International Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, awarding Andrew Cuomo with an Emmy, which, you know, you and I agreed was a bizarre thing for them to do. These are statues that are normally given to actors on television. They have news Emmys and sports Emmys and reality TV show Emmys, but there's never been an active politician in the past who was given an award, and they gave it to him, David, for these television broadcasts that he gave, which in my view were the driest press conference, you know, deliveries you could imagine. But what we now know is that they were also filled with false information.
Yeah.
As I'm sure your viewers are aware, the former lieutenant governor, I think her name is Kathy, is it Hochul? Yeah, Kathy Hochul has now taken office as governor. And one of her very first acts is that she issued a statement that there are an additional 12,000 deaths from COVID-19 that Cuomo did not tell the public about. Now, I know you and I share a certain degree of skepticism with regard to how these things are recorded and reported.
Well, we know now
the official.
We know now the PCR test, because they've admitted it. That's why they say we're going to do another one by the end of the year. We know now they can't distinguish between the cold, the flu, or RSV, or COVID, or whatever it is. And so, but he was putting sick people in the nursing home is the bottom line, one way or the other.
Yeah.
So, you know, those deaths are on him. And so now it's kind of blowing up. So let me ask you, when they gave him the Emmy, was it ostensibly for reality TV? Was it for fiction?
I mean, they did issue a statement saying that it was for his masterful, you know, television presentations. So I guess it was specifically for that. But those presentations contain this information. And without making any kind of commentary on the authenticity of the information, let's just accept it as the official information. Because, you know, David, when you're in court, sometimes there's the facts, there's the law, and there's what gets decided in court. And they don't always align. In fact, they're frequently very incongruent. So I'm not making my own personal commentary on these 12,000 deaths. I'm just saying if the court wants to deal with this official information, there it is. The new governor says the previous governor was lying or somehow presenting wrong information, misinformation, disinformation, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot that's happened in the lawsuit since we last spoke. And I think it's important for your audience to understand, just for their own benefit, if anyone is ever involved in a lawsuit, I, as a layperson, had this notion that, like, look, I don't think I did anything wrong. I think it was a parody. I'm just going to go into court and say this is a parody and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
But that's not what's happening. The judge has now decided that this was not a fair use. And my lawyer has withdrawn because social engineers were harassing him and published on a website what he perceived to be a death threat against his three-year-old daughter. Now, you would think, in the service of justice, the court would want to stop an outside agitator from doing those types of things or take some kind of action, particularly when that outside agitator also has a lawsuit against me in front of the same exact judge.
Wow.
So again, it's difficult for me to talk about this stuff because what the risk is that certain things that I say here in public can then affect the case, and I don't want to do that. But it's also important because I no longer have a lawyer. My lawyer has withdrawn. And because the Emmys have chosen to sue my corporation instead of me personally, I can't even defend pro se. So they're forcing me to hire an attorney. This attorney who's just withdrawn has basically drained all of my money. It's almost like he was the ship captain and I'm out at sea adrift on a now sinking ship that is on fire.
Yeah.
And the captain is pedaling away in a rowboat and I'm trying to interview new captains and say, hey, who wants the job? By the way, I have no money.
Yeah, anybody want to defend me just so we can defend free speech, right? Because what we're talking about is a parody. Show a picture of the Emmy Award, Travis. As everybody can see, the Emmy Award, a globe is being held up by this character that's part of the Emmy Award. And so in kind of a parody way, you talked about, what was it, the Coveys, or what was the title that you had for that?
What we did was we took that Emmy Award statue, an image of the Emmy Award statue, and we placed in its hands, instead of that sphere, the medical illustration of the COVID-19 molecule or particle or whatever it is. And right. We made a parody program about the Crony Awards.
Crony
and
Awards, yeah.
Another thing that they decided is because I didn't specifically say Emmys or something like that, I didn't specify that it was the Emmys, they don't think it's a parody. But, David, my work as a filmmaker, which was my background before I got into independent news, I am creating informative entertainment pieces. I want to engage the audience, and just in the same way that Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart, you know, these guys are crossing over between comedy and news. They talk about real items in the news, but they use their own satire and their own comedic spin to convey the news. This entire broadcast, in and of itself, the imagery, the choice of words, the things that we were saying, was a parody of the news that was being reported on the CDC's data. The judge has found, just as the plaintiff claims, that I traffic inter alia in conspiracy theories and misinformation. Now,
you know, this is what we're saying, Jason, exactly with the Babylon Bee. They're being attacked by Facebook and social media. They're constantly being labeled as fake news. It's like, we never said we were news. We're a parody site. But they never do that to Stephen Colbert. They never do it to The Onion or to Kimmel or any of these people. If the left does a parody, no matter how much they're, it's obviously a parody of a conservative political figure or an institution or whatever, it's okay. They recognize that as parody. But if you do it, you are lying to people, you're deceiving people, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're fake news, and we're going to label you as such and restrict your reach on social media and these other things. So this is not just you. This is broad-based. This is a big area of attack coming after it because they know that satire is very, very popular. Saul Alinsky said ridicule is the most effective weapon because there's no answer to it. That's why Colbert uses it all the time. But it's very political what they're doing to you and others.
I agree. And, you know, the real sinister thing is that here they are making these arbitrary, pejorative judgments about me that have no legal force or effect. There is no, you know, they're not saying Goodman robbed a bank, you know, calling me a conspiracy theorist. Well, what does that mean? It's clearly just a pejorative opinion statement. But now it has been galvanized in an order by a federal judge. And these terms like misinformation, it's coincidental that we see articles popping up in the news that 48% of the public wants social media to police misinformation. So if they just arbitrarily decide that what I'm saying is misinformation, that could cause some trouble for me. The real irony, David, is that they have given an award to an individual who now the governor of New York tells us was putting out misinformation.
Yeah.
So I'm just citing data from the CDC. By the way, our program was not about awarding countries that downplayed the severity of COVID-19. We were pointing out, as you just were, that countries like Nigeria, even though they have a population of 110 million, at the time had less than 2,000 deaths. Countries like Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia had remarkably better outcomes in terms of fatalities from COVID than the United States. And we were using parody, ridicule, satire, humor, all of these things to focus people's attention on this fact while the Emmys were, I should say, the International Academy of Television Arts and Sciences was busy handing out an award to a guy who has now resigned in disgrace for harassing women and hasn't even really been properly held to account for the real serious crimes, not to minimize sexual harassment. It's different than sexual assault, of course. No one denies the guy is a crude jerk. But I think we would all agree that causing someone to die is slightly more severe than pinching somebody's butt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've talked about that. I said, look at how you had people who not only looked the other way, but ran the other way when Bill Clinton was accused of violent sexual assault and rape by multiple accusers, very credible. They paid no attention to that. As a matter of fact, you had, you know, the people who had gone after Clarence Thomas jump into his corner. And so, yeah, it clearly is what he did in the nursing homes is clearly far more serious than harassment, which is, again, not violent sexual assault or rape that they excused for Bill Clinton and continue to do. Before we get on to find out what else is happening in New York, because I want to get a kind of an overview of you as to from you as to what's going on with the vaccine passports and the lockdowns and mandates and other things like that in New York and what you're seeing there on the ground. But also I noticed that the Emmys, as part of these restrictions that we're seeing happening everywhere, the Emmys are going to require vaccination proof and a negative COVID-19 test if you want to attend it this year. And that's going to be held in L.A. So that's not New York, but that's going to be in L.A. But these people are right at the epicenter of all of these lockdown moves, as you pointed out.
Absolutely. You know, the one in L.A. very probably is the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. This is an important distinction. It actually led to some embarrassment for the New York legislature. We have the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, which is the Los Angeles branch, the primetime Emmys, really the most recognized, you know, sort of set of these organizations. Then we have the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences located here in New York. They are the ones that initiated the suit against me. Their CEO, Adam Sharp, in particular, was the one who filed the complaint initially with YouTube to kick this all off. Then they have the International Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, which is the body that awards this Founders Award. And I think you and I have spoken previously about the fact that this Adam Sharp, who is the CEO of the Emmys, which, as you pointed out, like the CDC, this is a tax-exempt corporation. So I think it's important for your viewers to know their tax dollars, their hard-earned money, subsidizes the activities of all of these things. So it adds insult to injury to understand how objectionable what they're doing is when these super rich people are operating in a tax-exempt environment. And it creates certain obligations for the CEO in terms of his fiduciary responsibilities to the nonprofit organization and the taxpayers. And I think that's going to become an important part of the case. You know, they don't want me speaking about this publicly because they know that if the public realizes what is going on and what the relationships are between all these people who receive these Emmys, you know, David, if your show won an Emmy, I'm sure NBC, CBS, ABC, they'd be calling you up with big contract offers. I'm not suggesting that you want that, but this is how this works.
Yeah.
You win an Emmy and your salary on season 3 and season 4 goes up, up, up. So I don't know why that's tax exempt, but there's that.
Okay, so yeah, I was a little bit confused about that. I imagine the audience is as well. I do see in the article they're talking about the Television Academy. The Academy that's in L.A. So are they connected with each other? I mean, they're kind of using the same name, Emmy. How are they connected with each other?
Well, they share the trademark and copyright on the statue. But there does appear, as far as I understand it, and I need to go into this history a bit more, but it started in Los Angeles. And then as New York started to become more of a center of television, and Los Angeles basically traditionally has been more the home of motion pictures. Mm-hmm. And in my former career, there was a big rivalry. I think this is less so now, but people who are in the movies versus people who are in television, movies sort of thumb their nose at television. And there has always been a technological and economic rivalry between the two. You know, my previous work was in stereoscopic 3D. And if people start to look into the history of film, when television was invented, people making movies were very concerned that people would stop coming to the movies and just stay home and watch television.
Oh, yeah.
So they came up with various technologies, including 3D, CinemaScope, etc. And throughout history, there have been various inventions. The VCR caused another uproar where people were worried they wouldn't go to the movies and would watch movies at home. Now streaming creates yet another challenge. And this might be the nail in the coffin for traditional theatrical motion picture productions, because everything is shifting towards online streaming. And the other thing, David,
you and I both
rely on Subscribestar.com for viewer sponsorship, direct to viewer sponsorship. And I have to tell you, David, I believe this is the reason why these organizations despise what I'm doing. Because I was very early to this business model. When I used to watch your former show and all the other shows there on your former channel, I was confused by the fact that there was this supplement business and then the news show. And it was almost like you needed the supplement business to finance the news show and you needed the news show to advertise the supplement business. But the proprietor of both of those businesses found himself in charge of two businesses.
Yep.
And I went to visit Mike Adams one time, who has the same sort of business model. And it struck me as absolutely crazy that he's running two businesses, a video production and a vitamin factory. So I made my product just the videos. And I believe they hate this direct-to-viewer sponsorship because it eliminates the corporate sponsor in the middle who wants to sell you Coca-Cola and Pfizer vaccines and gasoline and cars and whatever it is they're trying to sell you. And they have a high degree of influence over the content of the news, whether the people delivering it understand that or not.
Oh yeah,
by having viewer sponsorship, they do.
I think so. And if you got a large sponsor that is then you know there is a tendency for people to stay away from anything that's going to make that sponsor angry, because now you're dependent upon that sponsor. I mean, you can see that with Fox News. They look at how many pharmaceutical ads they've got.
And pillow ads.
They used to have the pillow ads. I don't know if they got the pillow ads anymore. But, you know, it makes a big difference to them, and they will occasionally rise to the occasion. But I think that was what we saw for the longest time in terms of tobacco. You know, they were buying so many ads that the media really wasn't interested in talking about the health effects of cigarettes and so forth. They're not interested in talking about the health effects of pharmaceutical products. But, yeah, it does put you on the hook to where, you know, somebody's going to look at this and it's like, well, you know, if I talk about this story, that might, you know, get my sponsor angry and they drop me or whatever. Maybe I'll just talk about something else today, even if you don't, you know, expose what is happening there. So I agree with that. And I think what you're seeing there with that lawsuit is lawfare, you know, to try to bankrupt
Absolutely.
You. Obviously, these people have got deep, deep pockets. They're even getting government subsidies out of this as well. And so they feel like they can just sue you out of existence. And this is another tactic that we see happening everywhere.
Absolutely. And, you know, for people who might be skeptical, saying, oh, you know, crowdsource the truth is such a tiny little thing. How could the Emmys or the television industry care about something that Jason or that David Knight is doing to offer direct to viewer sponsorship? Well, I would offer that this is a group of people who have been around long enough to remember when YouTube was a couple of dopes going to the zoo and nobody really thought much about it. And
right.
I think now YouTube has had a major impact on the television industry. So they're aware that these small little entities must be crushed while they're tiny. They don't want to wait around until something becomes a multi-million-dollar entity that can defend itself.
Oh no, I know that. That's exactly the way these guys think. They don't get to the position where they are right now by ignoring any competitor. For years, you were in a different part of the video business. We're in the video retail business. My wife and I were for years, and so we knew the predatory practices of Blockbuster Video at the time. As soon as they were taken over by Viacom, CBS, and Summit Redstone, they never made a profit. They made a profit when they were run by Wayne Huizenga, who had started out by having a trash pickup company to simplify what it was. I mean, it was vast in its scope and everything. And he was making money with it. But when he sold it, Viacom never made any money. But what they would do, as they operated for decades off of the money they could get out of Wall Street, they would select a particular small business. And these are, you know, video retailers that would have maybe a half dozen stores max. And what they would do is they would open up a store right across the street or in the same shopping center in an out parcel from somebody who was in line. And they would do it to all of their stores at once, put that guy out of business, and they would pick somebody else on the list. And wow. So we went through that kind of – and these are small people. I mean, this is a national, maybe even multinational at the time, I don't know, a corporation that is that focused on putting their competition out of business. And so absolutely, they do not – it's just like Rockefeller when they ask him, you know, the reporter said, how much money is enough? He said, always just a little bit more. There is no end to this, you know, and there's no end to the greed either. You're talking about what they're doing with the windows and this lawsuit that's going on with Scarlett Johansson and Disney, right, where yeah. they went straight to streaming. They are going to push out all the movie theaters. That's been the plan yes. for a long time. They've been moving in that direction. At the beginning, as you pointed out, and we all remember – I remember this from being a child – how they were really against television and how they started running when cable came out, you know, fight pay TV. You would see these ads whenever you go right. see a movie. It's like, you don't want pay TV. Pay TV is bad. So they've always seen home video as a competitor to the movie studios, and they always push the movie studios, and they can control all of this by the windows that they release. And so now by going day and date to the streaming services, or just going only to the streaming services, really, that is, they've essentially signaled that they're done with the movie studios, with the movie theaters, I should say.
Absolutely, and there's been a push, you know, a push-pull thing going on for a long time. There was a virtual print fee fight that was going on with the theaters, the conversion to digital projection. It always is some sort of a dance between technology, economics, and all of that. But you're right, David. They are trying to consolidate everything and control everything. And I agree, this lawsuit is part of it. So we've got to stay independent.
Let's talk a little bit, since we're talking about what they're going to do in L.A. in terms of you got to be double vaxxed and you got to have a negative test and on and on. What are things like in New York now?
So about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I think a week ago, they have introduced the Excelsior Pass. And so now you cannot enter a restaurant or a gym, or a movie theater, or a public entertainment venue, a museum. There's a substantial list where you just cannot go in unless you have this vaccine passport. The Excelsior Pass is, I think, an app on your phone that records your vaccine status. So you are still allowed to sit outside at restaurants. And I did go to a restaurant with a friend of mine who would not accept that I do not want to support businesses that are submitting to this vaccine passport, but I think that's the last restaurant meal I'm going to have until they eliminate this. And people are asking me to fly here or fly there. I'm not getting on an airplane until they eliminate all of this. I don't want to have to put on a mask. Now, thankfully, my apartment building has eliminated the mask mandate. I used to have to wear a mask just to enter my own home.
Wow. Wow.
And the supermarket has eliminated that. So,
that's what I was going to ask you next about supermarkets, because you know, in L.A., they're talking about bringing this stuff back, and they're not making an exception for the supermarkets. And we saw this, I reported earlier, how in France they're keeping people out of the grocery stores, even getting violent, throwing them out. And it was kind of funny, Jason. What they did was in Versailles, they had a judicial tribunal that said we're going to change this because I think they're realizing that people are getting food elsewhere, and they don't want to have the big box retailers have what happened to them, what happened to the small non-essential right. service businesses, you know, because they got to hire security to throw people out and bounce them out. Plus, their traffic is dropping by 30% or 40% just by excluding people who aren't vaccinated. So that kind of backfired on them in France. But this is really getting serious. I mean, if they're going to stop people from getting food in stores, that's about as bad as it. Well, it's not as bad as it kind of get. I mean, they can put people in prison camps. But, you know, they continue to escalate this, even though this has been going on for a year and a half. And you know, we haven't really, you were there at the very beginning in New York. You were walking around and saying, I don't see the hospitals full here at all.
Exactly. And, you know, it's been the same. I've been by a hospital in the past couple of weeks, and there was no chaotic scene there. I can't say for sure. You know, I haven't been inside, but we've heard tons of reports of these breakthrough cases. And there was some study coming from Israel that said that they had, you know, the highest vaccination rate, but also an increase in cases, increase in deaths. It's strange to me, David, because, you know, I don't think you need to be an epidemiologist to realize, you know, if you had an infection on your finger and you went to the doctor and he said, oh, well, here, just put this cream on and come back in 2 weeks, it'll be fine. And you went back in 2 weeks and they said, ooh, it's getting worse. Keep putting the cream on. And after a year of putting this same cream on, the doctor was telling you, I think you need more cream. Wouldn't you go find a different doctor and realize this is the wrong approach? I don't understand how people can't use common sense to see that.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're going to give you booster cream.
Right. Right.
Okay. I'm new and improved booster cream. You know what you need is you need to triple this up. That's what really needs to happen. I love the fact that they pretended they did an FDA authorization of this thing. Right. And at the same time, they've already got in the pipeline the third shot because they said the first two don't work. How do you approve something that's not effective? You've already admitted that two shots don't do anything. Even if you go with their pronouncements and take them on face value, it is so contradictory and such an absurd narrative. It's just amazing to me that people are going on with this, but that shows the power of the press, the power of the narrative, and it's why an independent broadcaster like you is being attacked by these powerful people, because they don't want any other opinions other than the standard agreed-upon narrative for the agenda.
I agree with you, and you know, when I was studying stereoscopic cinematography, I worked with a lot of vision scientists and academics and things like that. And there was one guy who was a mentor to me who used to give a presentation where he would first show, he was talking about how much detail you get from looking at a stereoscopic image. And he started by showing a fax that just looked like a black and white mess, like a sort of a slurry of black, a black and white image of leaves. Then he showed you a color image of that same fax, and you could see that it was a black and white cow, spotted cow, standing in front of a bush. Hmm. Then when you went back and looked at the fax, even though you didn't notice this from the low resolution, black and white only image, you could not unsee the cow now that you had seen it in the color image.
Yeah.
So that's what we need to get to, is to reveal to people so they have that aha moment where they see how this has been hidden from them. And once you see it, you can't unsee it.
That's right. Yeah. About a year ago, I thought we had that an aha moment, but it didn't get a lot of press coverage. And the aha was the American Hospital Association, literally aha. And what they did was last August, they said, wait a minute, you told us you were going to give us a 20 to 25% bonus on everything we did if we identified somebody as being positive for COVID. And you also told us that you didn't have the tests and they didn't really work. And so you told us to do clinical diagnoses, but now you're telling us we've got to document this with a test, or you're not going to give us our bonus. I said, that's the aha moment. But it really didn't go anywhere. I mean, I've talked about it incessantly, but, you know, it really didn't get any traction anywhere in the media. My former news organization didn't want to say anything about that because, you know, Trump was the one who was injecting the cash everywhere, right? And so we don't want to point out that this is financially incentivized medical malpractice that is happening everywhere. It's not just, you know, you identify. The first thing that's happening, I've got a EMS listener. He says, for the first time, and this was a couple of months ago, he said, we brought somebody in who was clearly having a heart attack. And instead of rushing them in to the area where they could address that, they took him in and did a COVID test first.
Wow.
Because it's about the money. It's about the money.
But every minute when you're having a heart attack, that's right. Mm-hmm. Counts. There can be brain damage and severe Wow, it's really troubling what's happening, David. And, you know, I think you and I have previously spoken about a conversation that I had with the truly reprehensible Alan Dershowitz.
Oh, yeah.
And it was very odd to me that he would come onto my show, because Crowdsource the Truth, let's face it, Alan Dershowitz, he's internationally known. He represented the president or did something during the impeachment. He's represented everybody who's been accused of killing their wives. His own first wife jumped off of a bridge. Basically, people know this guy. Why does he want to or need to come on to Crowdsource the Truth? It didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, Epstein
initially,
lawyer.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he wrote that letter on Epstein's behalf, or signed the letter that went to Alexander Acosta. That was the source of Epstein's sweetheart deal, where they reduced the charge to soliciting prostitution and gave him 13 months of being in jail for an hour or something like that. But anyway, Dershowitz came on the show and he said that the government has the power to forcibly vaccinate you.
I remember that.
Which,
yeah,
I disagreed with his legal conclusion after he very flippantly and obnoxiously told me to go look it up. I did. And I looked up that 105-year-old Supreme Court opinion that was rendered on a vaccination technology that at the time was itself about 116 years old. That, mm-hmm, that case was dealing with the very first vaccine, which was the smallpox vaccine. And the point that I was trying to convey to Mr. Dershowitz was that at the time that that judgment was rendered, we had 100+ years of experience with that medical technology. It was widely disseminated and we had a good understanding of its efficacy, its safety, and the response to a large swath of the population. So for lawyers to then come in and make a legal judgment on the basis of a largely understood medical treatment is quite different than just calling something a vaccine and then applying vaccine laws to it. The analogy I've been using is, I can't just deliver you a Volkswagen and say it's a vaccine and force you to have to accept it into your arm because I've called it a vaccine.
Yeah.
The thing needs to demonstrate that it has the capability of what a vaccine is. And in my second conversation with Mr. Dershowitz, I came prepared to attack his legal argument. And of course, I'm not an attorney, but the first thing I did was I said, Mr. Dershowitz, you need to define some terms. And I went to the CDC's website. And again, I'm not making any judgment about them. I'm just saying we need some agreed upon terms if we're going to have a conversation about the law. And the CDC, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it said something to the effect of, it's an inoculation against a disease that prevents the individual from getting that disease and thereby transmitting it to other people. And Dershowitz said, no, I don't agree with that. And I said to myself, wait a minute, Dersh, this is the CDC. I don't care if you don't agree with it. That's what they say a vaccine is.
Oh, yeah.
And the point he made was, if there were a vaccine that would only prevent you from getting sick, but wouldn't stop you from spreading it to other people, then the government couldn't mandate that. But because your health could affect other people, according to Dershowitz, a vaccine that would prevent you from spreading it, that could be mandated. Now, the problem that Mr. Dershowitz finds himself in, other than being a detestable human being, is that the vaccine that we have now, they're saying, does the opposite of what he wants.
That's right.
It does, according to them, minimize the symptoms, which again, how do they know that? We'd have to have a time machine where a subject is getting COVID once without the vaccine, gauge those symptoms, go back in time, give them the vaccine, have that same individual contract COVID, and then compare the symptoms of this hypothetical contraction of the disease with the vaccine, and then determine if the symptoms were less. It's a nonsensical assertion on its face.
Or you'd even have to have like a control group and a test that runs for a period of time to know that, right? Which they destroyed
something
that, right?
Like
you
that.
Know,
right,
having a bigger test over a shorter period of time is still a short test. But, you know, when you talk about that Supreme Court case, I think it's important for people to understand that the resolution of that was not that they did what Dershowitz was saying on your program and other places. Oh, yeah, I would take them out, I would drag them out, and I would force that needle into their arm.
Yes.
That was not what the Supreme Court did. The Supreme
Five
Court
bucks.
Said you have to pay the fine. There was a fine associated with their refusing to do it. And so that's what he was challenging. He was saying, I'm not going to do this, and you can't fine me. Well, the Supreme Court, and I disagree with him, said that, no, we'll let them fine you for that. But he was never vaccinated for that smallpox disease. And so
correct.
When you look at that, we got to understand that the Supreme Court, and again, this gets back to one of my hobby horses here. We got to get over this idea of judicial supremacy. We don't have a government that was designed in the Constitution to be a pyramid structure with the federal government on top and the Supreme Court on top of the federal government. They don't. They should not have the final say on this. We have had that authority turned over to them by we the people and by all these people who don't want to have responsibility to make a decision. You know, presidents and congresses have turned this over to them because they would love for them to make these decisions for them. But, you know, we have fundamental rights that we possess as human beings, and the purpose of government is to defend those rights. That's the basis of the Declaration of Independence. We have a Bill of Rights, and they don't get to overturn that. And so I don't really, to a large extent, I don't really care what they say. But what they said was not what Dershowitz is saying, that you can force somebody to get that in their arm.
Yeah. I think the other thing that we need to consider, and David, I know you have called out a lot of lying losers, and we know what lying losers do when they get called out for their lies and they lose, they move the goalposts.
That's
so
right.
I recently saw another interview with Dershowitz speaking to Laura Ingraham, who I believe is also an attorney, and she fundamentally disagreed with his legal opinion about, as you are, about that Supreme Court opinion. So Dershowitz brought up that, oh, well, George Washington had a vaccine mandate. And I was very confused by that because Bruce Jenner's grandfather, or great, sorry, Caitlyn Jenner. I don't want to dead name anybody.
I just call him Bruce Jenner, so it's not. I'm not saying anything about Caitlyn Jenner. I'm just calling Bruce Jenner. Oh, I don't know.
That's the first.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Well, but the point is, I've always heard that Dr. Jenner was the father of vaccines, and that 1796, the introduction of the smallpox vaccine was the first vaccine. So there's some distinction between this inoculation that George Washington was mandating and an actual vaccination. But here's the key point. That was mandated for the military. And I'm not saying that I approve of that, but we do need to make a distinction that when you go into the military, you are voluntarily giving up many rights to become a part of something that is unique as compared to civilian society. If I'm working for a movie that is a private production, and they say, Jason, go up that hill and get a shot. And I say, I'm not going up that hill. There's bombs going off. I'm in an argument with the director now, and yeah. I could quit and walk off set. But if the general or the sergeant says, Goodman, take that hill, and there's fire coming in, I'm in the army to sacrifice my life to protect freedom. So if they mandate that the army needs to take an inoculation, I'm not saying I agree with that. But what I definitely disagree with is that that mandate would be tantamount to mandating citizens and civilians take an inoculation.
That's right. Excellent point. Yeah, I've said from the very beginning of this, I said, I'm all about taking medical advice. I'm open to any medical advice anybody wants to give me about anything. But I refuse to take medical orders. And that's what we've seen this last year, medical orders. That is like martial law. Going back to smallpox just briefly. You know, when you look at this, and I keep hearing all this stuff about the Delta variant, and of course, if they were going to test for the Delta variant, it's even more of a problem than the PCR test is for them, because they got to do, you know, DNA testing and genome sequencing and so forth to determine whether that's the case. They've admitted that they won't tell people whether they've got the Delta variant or not, because, you know, they'd like to be able to put that on their social media. They've got the Delta variant, you know, to get some credits. But they won't tell them, and so people were upset about that, and they were saying, well, the reason they can't tell you is because they don't know. They haven't done a lot of these tests. They haven't been approved and so forth. They don't have the time to do it. So they're not even testing. They're just attributing it to the Delta variant. But when you look at the variant thing, Jason, going back and looking at smallpox, I mean, look it up. There's two primary strains of smallpox. Do you have to get a vaccine for each of those? No. And we're talking about something that is different than a variant. And I've asked the listeners, I said, you know, hey, if you disagree with me, please let me know if you're a biologist. I'm not a biologist, but I want to look it up. And I say that there's two very distinct strains of smallpox, and you are inoculated against both of those. How is it that if this is a true, and again, the purpose of a vaccine, they keep changing the definition.
Yes.
And you know, they've expanded it significantly in Merriam-Webster's thing, you know, including mRNA and all examples of mRNA. But if a vaccine is fundamentally there to prevent a disease by training your immune system somehow, Yes. That's my understanding of a vaccine. If that's the case, then why can't this thing, it's a failure if it can't train your body to deal with minor variants that are not as different as a strain. And so that is a key issue with this as well. And the vaccines that they had with smallpox didn't have all of the preservatives and the adjuvants and all these other things that have been added once the big manufacturing got involved, just like they add preservatives and other things and emulsifiers to our food.
Yes.
They've done that to the vaccine. So, you know, you're not comparing apples to apples when you go back and look at smallpox historically.
Well, I agree. And I also think it's fundamentally idiotic to base our modern healthcare technology on something that was done in 1796. I'm fine with Alan Dershowitz doing that if he wants to. But when I go to the hospital, I don't want any leeches around. I'd like the doctor to work in a sterile environment. I don't want to do what they were doing in 1776. And frankly, this opinion from 1905, doesn't the law need to be updated to deal with technology and changes in society? Dershowitz seems to think no, but they just keep moving the goalposts, David. That's all they can do.
And from the very beginning, I've said about this, the dangerous thing about this, even more so, I said, even if this is a bioweapon that was designed in Wuhan and deliberately released, you know, like a smallpox blanket type of thing or something, even if that's what this was, biological warfare, weaponized, I said, the worst thing we could do would be what we did and what we've been doing for the last year and a half. If we lock down everything, if we establish martial law, that's going to make it difficult for us to even have a system that works in terms of providing food and medicine and medical care. We certainly do not want to ever give up our liberties that were hard won out of fear, because it's going to be very difficult to get them back. And that's what we've seen now for the last year and a half. And it is going to be difficult to get them back, but we're going to do that. Because we're not going to submit to this new tyranny. And I think people are starting to wake up now and starting to see what this is. The question is going to be, will it happen quickly enough? We don't need to wake up 100% of the people. If we've got a third of the people who are not going to go along with something, that's pretty big. Even if we've got 10%, that's still pretty big. And that's going to be a big problem for them to deal with. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I know that's what you're trying to do at Crowdsource the Truth as well. I really do appreciate you coming on. And I'm sorry that you're going through this situation. If people want to help you, they can find you at crowdsourcethetruth.org. I guess you've got the connections there, how people can support you through Subscribestar and things like that as well, right?
Absolutely. And just very quickly, one last comment, David, on something that you said about the vaccine being a failure. It's potentially worse than that. There's something called a leaky vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
They use this terminology called a perfect vaccine, which is obviously misleading because nothing in the real physical world is perfect, but they're saying a perfect vaccine emulates natural immunity, which we've now seen a study that says natural immunity to COVID is 13 times more effective than this vaccine immunity. But the leaky vaccine is an imperfect immunization that actually can result in more deadlier strains of a viral pandemic and can be incredibly dangerous. So hopefully that will not happen. But David, thank you for having me on, and thank you for your support as always. I really appreciate you and your audience.
Well,
it's great to speak to you again.
Thank you. It's great talking to you. We'll have to do it again soon. Thank you, Jason. And again, Jason Goodman, crowdsourcethetruth.org. We're going to take a quick break. As a matter of fact, we're not going to take a quick break. I'm just going to, as a transition to get Jason off here and we can switch over. I'll just so you remember where we are with this and just so you understand what the appropriate response is. Let me play you how the people at the school board responded when they were reminded that they needed to do everything that their emperor said.
Effective in fighting COVID under rules established by health experts. One would have to dismiss the views of highly educated and experienced scientists, people like Dr. Anthony Fauci or Dr.
That's right. Thou shalt not laugh at his emperor. You know, do. And that's really the bottom line here. This is what Jason is fighting. This is what the Babylon Bee is fighting. If you laugh at these, the appropriate response to this nonsense that they're giving us is exactly that. It's laughter. But let's talk a little bit about, we still have not talked about these pop-up vaccine clinics in the schools. And this is a key issue, folks. Let's just talk about the toxicity of these mandates and how these people don't care at all about health. They really don't, especially individual health. And how many times have I said, if you want to push on public health, if you're going to make public health the goal and you have some idealized idea of what is in the collective good is always placed in opposition to the individual, just as safety is always placed in opposition to liberty. And so this is what this looks like. In Alaska, and we've seen people who have been taken off the list for organ donation because they did not get vaccinated. And now here is an Alaska woman who is denied life-sustaining treatment because she won't take the experimental vaccine. Courtney Chavez of Wasilla, Alaska, suffers from multiple autoimmune diseases, a blood clotting disorder, and a bleeding disease. Now, those last two things there, even if you wanted to deny the connection of vaccines to autoimmune disease, and you shouldn't, it's been very clearly documented that these vaccines have a great deal to do with both blood clots and bleeding. Since 2007, the stay-at-home mother of two has received life-sustaining treatment for her bleeding disease by Dr. Michelle O'Fallon at the Alaska Internal Medicine and Pediatrics in Anchorage. In late July, however, Chavez said she got a call from Dr. O'Fallon's office informing her that she is being dropped as a patient because she declined to get the Trump shots. For the past 14 years, Chavez has driven into Anchorage every 28 days to get medication at the O'Fallon's center. She said, "It's the only reason I'm alive today because the disease almost killed me. The infusion treatments," she said, "are the only medication that my body has responded to." But she got this notification from the office of Dr. O'Fallon. "Your physician, Dr. O'Fallon, feels that if you're so opposed to the vaccine and not willing to heed her medical recommendation, that this is not a healthy working relationship, and has released you as her patient. She'll provide you with 1 month from the above date supply of your prescription meds that you receive from her while you find another provider." Now, understand, it's not just a prescription. She has to go there for some kind of a treatment every 28 days, some kind of an infusion treatment. So far, Chavez has been unable to find a location that can do this treatment. She said she's not normally hesitant about taking vaccinations, but she worries that she may have severe side effects from these shots due to her existing blood clotting disorder and other conditions. She said, "My doctor knows that I'm not anti-vaccine, but I've had a lot of different medications for these conditions, and I've had a lot of different reactions from mild to life-threatening from these different drugs." So she says, "The problem is, if I have a bad reaction with some of these other drugs from mild to life-threatening, I can stop the drug." But she said, "You can't stop a vaccine. Once it's in, it's in." They're seeing neurological issues, strokes, blood clots. They're seeing a lot of things, but at this point, there's no long-term studies. I told my doctor, I want to wait until they know more. I don't want to run out and get a shot, possibly deal with more long-term issues. She said she was able to see her doctor for the last year and a half with no problem. See, this is just like the nurses that you see everywhere. These are nurses who were heroes. They were on the front line. They're working long shifts, we're told, and doing TikTok videos. But, you know, these are people who have worked in this environment for the last year and a half. But now, all of a sudden, we flip the switch. Even before, you had this phony authorization from the FDA. And I say it's phony because they violated all their rules. And I talked yesterday about whether or not it's, you know, legitimately approved. Comirnaty and the Pfizer, the BioNTech Pfizer, they're essentially the same. But again, there is a legal distinction, and you need to understand that legal distinction because that might buy you a little bit of time. But it's not going to buy a whole lot of time. That's why I said from the very beginning, we can't be content to just say that you can't force me to get this because it's emergency use authorization. I said they can just pretend that it's authorized for no reason at all and do that at any point in time, which is now what we've seen as of this last Monday. So she was able to see the doctor for the past year and a half, no problems. She said she'd always taken extra precautions to wash her hands, to avoid people who were sick, wearing masks and so forth. She said the practice even boasts about treating multiple generations over the years. She said, they say, "One of the things that we love the most is to care for entire families with multiple generations, and we have cared for as many as four generations at one time," said the clinic. Chavez said, "But they've watched my kids grow up. What do you mean I can't come here anymore?" Again, for the last year and a half, she was going there. But now you take the vaccine or we're going to cut you off. She can't find anybody else who can do this treatment. I just want to wait and see what the long-term studies find. For those of us who struggle with medicines, and she's had a lot of bad reactions, it's scary. Especially having been through some of the stuff that I've been through with some of the reactions of these drugs. We're seeing patients being held hostage. Personally, I feel that breaks the do-no-harm Hippocratic Oath. Because these are experimental. They do not know the long-term effects. And they're seeing a lot of side effects. Forcing something on someone does not follow the do-no-harm code. In fact, as LifeSite points out, this is a story from LifeSite News. In fact, the Nuremberg Code recognizes that each individual has a right to freely exercise their will without coercion. Without coercion from your doctor, from a hospital, from your employer, from the government, from anybody to consent to this. Now, it's not just that lady. I mentioned that first because in Australia, we see 4 newborns are dead because they were denied heart surgery because of Australian travel restrictions around this so-called pandemic. But, you know, how many kids, how many newborns do we kill every day, even before they're newly born, with abortion? So I mentioned that second because we've kind of hardened our hearts to that, haven't we? Don't really care about that. These are newborn infants who would have typically been flown to Melbourne, which is about 75 minutes away by flight if they had heart issues. In the past, this particular area, which did not have these pediatric cardiac surgery capabilities, would fly about 100 babies a year. But they stopped doing that, so 4 of them have died. Never even left. But then we get to what they're going to do. You talk about these are newborn babies with cardiac issues. Cardiac issues are a big part of these vaccines. And I say a big part of this. Again, how many people do we have with myocarditis or pericarditis or heart attack before we stop this? How many people have to die? You have 13,000 approximately reports of deaths entered into just the U.S. system. We had stopped this in 1976 with 50 deaths. We stopped the Boeing 737 MAX with a little over 500 deaths. You don't want to tell me that we've got legitimately 500 people who died from this vaccine or even 50 who died from this vaccine, but we're going to continue. And you tell me that these heart issues are only affecting young people? Well, no, actually, we've got the reporter from Australia that I talked about earlier in the show. He's in the hospital with heart issues, with pericarditis. They typically say this is only the children because they can't excuse it any other way. This is a real side effect. It's a very deadly side effect. This is something that's going to affect them all their lives. And yet we're going to continue on. We're going to press on. All children in the UK between the ages of 12 to 15 to be injected with or without parental consent, with or without parental knowledge. This has arisen from leaked emails showing correspondence going back and forth between the public health dictators who will press on with this. They have absolutely no interest in individual health. They have an agenda. They want to sell vaccines. They want to push this. And you better start asking yourself if this isn't a deliberate depopulation effort because they're just ignoring everything. So, children have no legitimate risk from this, no measurable risk from this. We know from their own statistics. And this, of course, was something like measles. And now we know that this is not being done to stop the transmission because AstraZeneca, right there in the UK, you know, the Oxford vaccine people who created that, they did their own study and said 251 times the viral load for people who have been vaccinated. But they have... The UK National Health System has reportedly made plans to vaccinate children as young as 12 without the need for parents' permission, a plan that government advisors have not yet supported. But you just wait, because they do everything these so-called health officials want. And you think that's just England? This is what is happening in the U.S. Miguel Cardona, who is the head of Biden's Department of Education, had this to say.
Vaccines are working, and they're the safest and most effective way to fight back the COVID-19, to prevent outbreaks, and to ensure a safe school year. So I am echoing the president's call to action to host pop-up vaccine clinics in every school across the country.
pop-up vaccine clinics in every school across the country. You heard him. You heard him say that. And that's what the administration here in America wants to do. And I'm telling you that it's going to play out the same way that they're talking about, that they're wargaming in the UK. I've talked many times about a case, and it was back in the late 80s or early 90s. It was in Massachusetts, and it was a father who did not want his 8-year-old daughter going to a sex education class that they were having. And it wasn't the kind of perversion that you're seeing pushed on kids with the LGBT agenda now. It was normal sex, but it was inappropriate for this child's age. She was 8 years old. They said, no, we're going to do it anyway. He went on the school grounds to get her out, and they arrested him. And the judge said, when you drop your kid off at the school, you have abandoned them to the state, and we will act in loco parentis, in place of the parents. So let me tell you, this is what this Department of Education guy, Miguel Cardona, is really talking about. He had said, as part of this speech that he gave yesterday, he said, states should repeal laws barring local school districts and municipalities from mandating masks for students and teachers. He declined, however, to say that states should require teachers to get vaccinated, except that he did say that as recently as the 11th of this month. He said that he wanted vaccines for all teachers and school staff. And, of course, that was before they gave their magic blessing of FDA so-called authorization. He does want $130 billion in federal aid to do these pop-up clinics. This is big business. They have an agenda. They're not going to leave the kids alone. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.